space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one, but four separate chat rooms. I'm sitting here trying to post a Facebook deal. Anyway, if you're on that super chat room, scroll down there to the bottom down there and check out the link to People for People Radio, and check into Wolf Spirit Radio as well. While you're on that website, scroll up to the top of the chat room there in the super chat and check out Stephen Gibbons' resource page. He's got all kinds of links on there. And I'm pretty positive he's probably got some information regarding this as well. He also posted in the chat room a link to the Atmospheric Group. It's another one of the deals I wanted to talk about on today's show. Essentially, what is atmospheric electricity? You know, there's a weak conduction current of atmospheric ions moving in the atmosphere, electric field about 2 picoamperes per square meter, and the air is weakly conductive due to the presence of these atmospheric ions. So, to put that in simple terms, instead of that craziness right there, all that high-tech terminology, the air up in the air is positively charged and the earth is negatively charged. Tesla had a patent out there, a radiant energy patent is what it was called, and basically it was taking a piece of conductive metal and putting it up on a pole or something, and then you run a wire down from that. And then you got a spark gap going in between that wire and the earth ground. So essentially, when the atmosphere is smashing into the plate that you got up there, it's producing electric charge. I'm going to play a couple podcasts on here that basically, one of them was Laser Saber and one of them was Rimstar.org, I think. I'll have to look in this here real quick. Let's see which one I want to start with. Dad, burn it. Got so many things going on here. That's one of the things here. Shazia's Radio, duct tape and bailing wire, folks. Yeah, here we go. I'll start with this one right here. Hopefully we don't get a
Hi, gang. I previously demonstrated generating power using atmospheric electricity. A hexacopter was used to lift one end of a wire high up into the air. Meanwhile, the other end of the wire was connected to a corona motor near the ground. Electricity then flowed through the wire and corona motor, making it turn. In this video, I'm going to explain how it works. Much of the following explanation is adapted from Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman's lecture on physics, a section called Electricity in the Atmosphere. For every meter you go up in the air, the voltage increases by around 100 volts, or we could say around 100 volts per yard. We can draw these voltage increases using what are called equipotential lines. Notice that the ground is negative and the sky is positive with respect to each other. According to Feynman, this extends upward to 50 kilometers, or 31 miles, where the air is very conductive. This is the case in fair weather. In stormy weather, like a thunderstorm, things are quite different, and I won't talk about that here. But if this voltage exists between your head and the ground, why don't you get a shock? The reason is that your body is a good enough electrical conductor that standing on the ground, you're basically a part of the ground. The equipotential lines would look like this. There's still effectively 0 volts between the top of your head and ground. Similar effects happen with trees, buildings, and so on. What about the electric current? The downward electrical current exists.
I'll pause that just for a second there. See, that's where the spark gap comes in. Basically, what he just said about that, you know, why is it that if a yard off of the ground, which is about 3 feet, if you're 3 feet off the ground, then it's supposed to go up 100 volts every 3 feet, all the way up to the highest height up there. But anyway, because you're actually part of the ground, close enough to the ground, all of that is basically absorbed in. Same reason why they use lightning rods and stuff on tops of buildings. It's not to, in case you get hit by lightning, which basically would guide it to the ground, but more or less it takes that charge out of the air around it so that the chances of you getting hit by lightning is a whole lot less. So, essentially, that spark gap just opens up a little bit of space for that charge to build up before it actually leaps across that gap. And so that's why you can actually start to store that energy. That's what the Atmospheric Group also, like I said, let's see, Stephen Gibbons posted a link to the IonPowerGroup.com down there if you want to check that out and see what they're doing. They're getting about 9,000 volts using this process. But either way, the reason why you ain't getting shocked, until the upper atmosphere charges up high enough to ionize the air in between the earth and the ground to make it electrically conductive, then you don't have no path to ground for the electrons to flow. And so if you happen to be standing in the wrong place at the wrong time, then you'll get laid out. But if you understand this process of what's going on, then you would be able to calculate ways that you could actually start to gather this energy up, and I want to talk about that some more, but I want to finish this here first.
And consists of positive ions. Molecules are clumps of matter that have a positive charge. These ions are moving slowly toward the ground. The current density from these ions is very small, around 10 microamps, or 10 picoamps, crossing each square meter or yard every second. So in any small area, there's not a lot of power. And that's the explanation about atmospheric electricity, adapted from Feynman's lectures. To take advantage...
Okay, I want to pause it one more time. He's also talking about how negative ions are basically like raining out of the sky. And so whenever I'm sitting here saying that you're surrounded in a sea of free energy, basically science already proved that. That's not the problem. The problem is because of the way that this energy is, it's not like you can just plug it into a motor if you don't understand how to, you know, move it, store it, change it, and all that kind of stuff. It's like a really weak charge, you know, right down there in the microamps, as far as what he was just saying right there. But if you start to understand about this energy, that you can actually store it, any voltage buildup is pressure, and that's what the atmospheric group did. Well, they call it the ion power group, but I don't know, there's two different names there. I don't know how that came about. But anyway, nonetheless, they have some about 120-foot poles up. I think at one time I thought they were like 200 feet up, but I guess they were only like 120 feet up. But there's four of them. And they're also using another technique, because these ions want to go to sharp points. What they done was they took and they nano-coated some wire with carbon graphene technology, like Robert Murray Smith's working with. So that technology combined with the graphene is really conductive. It's one of the best conductive materials that we made, and it's able to help assist to bring more power down. And so we'll get some more into that too.
Of this atmospheric electricity, we electrically connect one end of a wire to the ground and lift the other end up into the air. In our case, we got good results at around 120 meters or 390 feet up. At 100 volts per meter or 100 volts per yard, that's 12,000 volts between that height and the ground. But just as with you standing on the ground, the wire is an electrical conductor, and so is also at ground potential. Looking at the equipotential lines around the wire, that voltage of 12,000 volts exists between some distance away from the wire and the wire. You can see that the equipotential lines are closest together at the top of the wire. This means the attraction is strongest there, and electrons make their way upward in the wire. Let's look more closely at the top of the wire. We put six sharp points using sewing pins at the top of that wire, but for ease of illustration, I'll draw just one. Notice that because of the sharp shape at the point, the charges are crowded together at that point. Remember also that there are positively charged ions in the air. An electric field exists between the negative charges on the wire and the positive charges in the air. And we can represent that electric field by drawing lines between pairs of opposite charges. Notice that the electric field lines are closer together near the point, meaning the electric field is stronger there. It's strong enough to remove the negative electrons from the sharp point, where they neutralize positive ions. But due to the voltage, there are fresh positive ions moving downward and fresh negative charges coming up from the wire. We now have electricity flowing through the wire. The electric current in that electricity is very weak, though. We didn't measure it, but from my experience with electrostatics, I'd estimate it in the low microamps, or more likely even lower. That's not enough to turn an electromagnetic motor, one like you use in everyday life, but it is enough to turn an electrostatic motor, like this corona motor. The corona motor consists of a plastic cylinder surrounded by sharp-edged metal blades. Every second one of those blades is connected to the wire going up into the sky. That means that when the wire starts conducting, those blades are now whatever voltage the top of the wire is up in the sky, though opposite in polarity, positive. That's why you get a shock when you touch one of those wires. Negative charge is then pulled from the plastic cylinder through a gap between the edge of the blade and the cylinder. That leaves the cylinder with the same charge, and since light charges repel, a repulsion occurs that rotates the cylinder. The next blade is connected to Earth ground and becomes negatively charged. And since opposite charges attract, it attracts the charged area of the cylinder. It then neutralizes that charged area by taking electrons from the ground. And that's how atmospheric electricity can power an electrostatic motor like a corona motor. Well, thanks for watching. See my YouTube channel for more interesting videos like this. That includes one with a more detailed demonstration of this atmospheric electricity in action powering the corona motor, another showing how this corona motor was made, and one showing how to generate electricity using a Peltier module. And don't forget to subscribe if you like these videos, or give a thumbs up, share with your social media, or leave a question or comment below. See you in a bit.
Okay, that was a rimstar.org video. Between him and Laser Saber, they both have some really awesome 3D printed atmospheric motors that they're pretty impressive the way that they've been working on these things for quite some time. Let me see, I want to play one of these two here. Let me see what this one is. LaserHacker.com.
Okay, so this video is going to feature my recent visit at the Ion Power Group's research and test facility. So Ion Power Group saw one of my videos on YouTube with my Atmo motor, and they contacted me, and we got to writing back and forth about atmospheric electricity on the Atmo motor. And I found out that they had carried on the research of Dr. Oleg Jefimenko. They corresponded with him before he passed away, and then they carried on with this research here. And you can see their ion collector towers. They've got these four poles here. They're at about 130 feet in height. Strung between those four poles, they have a wire, so it forms a large square if you were looking down on it. And connected all along that wire are what they call ion collectors. And we'll get into that in more detail in a minute. Okay, so Ion Power Group has been testing this technology here at this test site for about the last 10 years, and they've really been flying under the radar because, you know, I really keep my ear to the ground and try to connect with and understand, you know, what's going on with this type of technology because it's something I'm interested in experimenting with myself. I never heard of these guys until they contacted me and wanted to test the Atmo motor with their setup. So I was very, very impressed with the amount of progression and progress they've made with this technology over the last 10 years. Now they want to take it to the next level. They want to test the scalability of this thing. They want to scale this up to create an actual atmospheric electricity power station. They're going to try crowdfunding. They got an Indiegogo campaign going on. I told them I'd put a link to that in this video description. And I went ahead and made a donation to their work myself. And let me tell you why. You know from following me that I'm an open source, do-it-yourself kind of guy, completely through and through. You know, I share everything freely. You know, I'm not into the patents and all that. Now, these guys patent everything they're doing, etc. And I thought they were going to be really secretive when I visited. I figured they'd have stuff and they'd say, oh, we don't want you to see that, or don't look here, or don't do this. They were not that way at all. They were completely open and transparent with everything they were doing. They showed me everything. They encouraged replication, which is really important to me. They said, you know what, replications help verify this technology. So I really appreciate that attitude. Secondly, I want to contribute to what they're doing just because I want to see where they go with this. You know, I'm already impressed with what they've done over the last 10 years. I hope they can carry on, that they can scale this up, and, you know, really test the scalability of this whole thing. So that's the reason I wanted to go ahead and be part, you know, a small part of what they're doing.
Okay, it's an established scientific fact that up in the air there are lots of particles that are electrically charged floating around up there. They're caused by any number of circumstances, but we won't go into that detail now. But the fact is that they are there and they are electrically charged. What we've done is we have given them a place to couple to very readily through a strip of carbon, graphite, graphene, which has millions upon millions of microscopic conductive points all over it. And as anybody knows from high school and college physics, electric fields tend to gather and be attracted to points, the corona effect. And so we have these collectors waving up in the air about 130 feet right now, And they harvest around 2 kilovolts night and day, good weather, bad. Actually, during bad weather, it will spike upwards of, I've measured up to 250,000 volts before. But typical, it'll go up to around 30 kilovolts or 40 kilovolts. And we trap that in capacitors, and then we can use that as usable energy. Now, what we want to do in the next phase is we want to go up to around 600 to 800 feet. So that will be constantly pulling in between 10 kilovolts through 12 kilovolts night and day. And then when it spikes, it'll go up into the hundreds of thousands of kilovolts. And that is all containable energy that we can make use of to do any number of things, including make hydrogen gas from water, spin motors, and eventually on a larger scale, even help power the grid.
Awesome. Okay, so it sounds like the use of graphene is fairly critical in the future of both atmospheric electricity harvesting as well as new capacitor technologies. You want to explain a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Graphene is the most conductive material that man has ever created. It is going to revolutionize pretty much everything having to do with electronics and energy storage. And we have filed patents worldwide for the use of graphene for ion harvesting. And it should give us, in my opinion, an order magnitude greater efficiency in the harvesting process.
Okay, so you've got patents pending. Now, you of course encourage the experimentation and replication of this technology with folks like myself. In the do-it-yourself maker type crowd, right?
Absolutely. The more people that can say, yeah, I've put these ion collectors up in the air and have measured kilovolts off it, the more the word will get out and the more collective research will go into this, and the quicker mankind can benefit from this amazing phenomenon that is proven science now.
Awesome. Very good.
All right. A genius named Tesla filed a patent back in, I believe it was 1901, because he noticed the phenomenon that if he put a conductor up in the air, that if he left it there, it would develop a charge. Mm-hmm. And so he filed a patent on that.
Yep.
And of course, Tesla is responsible for the majority, at least in my opinion, of our modern technology. So the technology that we have developed is really an extension of Tesla's discovery back in 1901. Our twist and our advancement is that we have discovered that if you put up carbon graphite graphene, it increases the harvesting efficiency quite a bit.
Awesome.
This is the drop line coming down from the ion collectors outside. It's rated at 20 kilovolt insulation. And many times, especially during peak ion periods, sparks will punch through this insulation and shoot to the wooden wall right here and cause burn marks in the wall and smoke to come out. And so I've placed this whiteboard in the way, and that seems to help the discharge problem a little bit. Of course, the real solution is getting some better wire, which when we get a budget, I plan on doing.
Awesome. So, as we talked earlier, you mentioned that you had corresponded with Dr. Oleg Jefimenko, and basically everything he showed in his research is legit and pans out.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The doctor was way ahead of his time, decades ahead of his time, and in a way, we are picking up part of his research and advancing it forward.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yes, things seem better days. All right. This is our patented down converter. It takes high voltage energy that's developed by the ion collectors and steps it down to usable low voltage on a small scale. What we're going to do when we get a budget, we're going to improve upon it as far as larger components and whatnot so that we can handle the larger volumes of energy we're bringing in now and be able to power standard everyday devices like computers and stereos and television sets. Alright, this is a 1,000 times probe, and we are now connected. It reads 8.98, which is just a smidge under 9 kilovolts. Would you turn off that light switch right behind you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, please, sir. It's not going to be enough to really make a visual thing, but you just so I'm ground. This is ground.
Okay.
This is hot.
Yep.
Nice.
Did you see it?
Yep, saw it.
So, I mean, that's real-time power coming in.
How long does it take before you get another
2 seconds.
Yeah, let me get up close for you.
So this is real-time, no capacitor storage.
Nice. Let me get in closer and try to catch this part.
All right, this is real-time, no capacitors connected.
Okay, so this real-time power mode, as Ion Power Grid calls it, is what's most interesting to me, and this is usually what I experiment with. This is where you've got an aerial to the sky and the ground, and you're actually showing the energy generated between those two points, and you see that here in the spark gap. This is what they call an active ion day. You know, this is when the atmosphere has more atmospheric electricity in it, because it does vary quite a bit. In my own research, I've gone out, you know, and sometimes on a clear day I'll get more than I'll get on a cloudy day. It varies. There's kind of a baseline that you can always count on, but then it can go way up from there, just depending on the atmosphere and what's going on in the atmosphere. So they had some of these clips from previous active ion days. You know, the day I was there visiting with my family and kids, it was a fairly mild day, and as you saw in the capacitor bank, it was up at around... I think it was basically 9,000 volts. So, now it had charged up to that point. But anyway, you get an idea of watching these video clips, what it's like when the sky is active. Now remember, this is at 130 feet, so I can only imagine what it's going to be like as they lift their aerials up to 300 or 800 feet. So, very fascinating, neat technology.
The sound you hear is the pulse of the spark gap. The motor is now connected to the circuit, and it spins. This demonstrates how high voltage energy harvested from naturally occurring ions in the air can power a motor in real time. The white wire coming from the ceiling is connected outside to our patented ion collectors and feeds high-voltage electricity harvested from ions in the air to these fluorescent bulbs. The sound you hear is the pulse of the spark gap. These 16 feet of fluorescent bulbs are being pulse illuminated by electric power harvested from naturally occurring ions in the air.
So, I had a great time visiting the Ion Power Group. I really appreciated their open sharing attitude with everything they're doing, and just had a great time, and it really fit nicely with the research I've been doing. You know, I learned some things, I've got some new ideas I want to try with some of my atmospheric electricity, and I've had a similar progression going from very small, you know, little tiny single piece of wire rotating to larger motor, to large Atmo motor. I want to keep experimenting, I want to keep scaling up myself, but all in all, it was a great trip. The family had a great time on the vacation. I had a great time visiting the Ion Power Group, and definitely energized and want to continue my personal exploration of atmospheric electricity. Now, to end the trip, I just want to point out that I had a Royal Hexacopter crash. This is a great blooper here, and I'll put a couple blooper clips here in the end of this video, but hang on, folks. Yeah, let's all keep experimenting.
Alright, we don't want to listen to him crash his Hexacopter. But the reason why I'm playing these little podcasts is because there's some pretty important things that are said in each one of them.
Okay, if you've watched some of my earliest atmospheric electricity videos and research with the Atmo motor, you know I've talked about Hermann Plossen and some of the work he did in the 1920s. He's one of the few that claims to have brought down power in the range of kilowatts from the atmosphere. And if you look over his patents, one of the things that comes up is the use of a flame as a collector of atmospheric electricity. Now, atmospheric electricity runs about 30 volts per foot as you move up from the surface of the Earth, and it can get up into the thousands of volts. Now, I've been doing a lot of research with Atmo motors to convert high-voltage static electricity into something useful, but I haven't been doing as much research in the collecting of atmospheric electricity and trying different collectors. So far, I've just been trying needle points, but Hermann Plossen talks about using flames of various kinds and lamps, as well as radium. Oleg Jefiminko also used radium on a 20-foot pole to run a small atmospheric motor, just on a 20-foot pole. I don't have access to radium, but I've decided to do some research with flame and see if that makes any difference over just a needle point. So I've got my Van de Graaff running at a set speed, and it's positioned at a set distance. And I'm reaching over with the needle, being careful to hold the insulated cover, not the needle itself, but as you can see, it's just not a good enough collector to spin up this mini Atmo motor. So leaving everything in the same position, same speeds, I'm going to do a test with a propane torch. In this setup, I have the red wire connected to the metal portion on the tip of the propane torch. The first time I tried this and saw the mini Atmo motor spin up so quickly at the same distance as the needle test, I was just amazed. It's one of those moments where history comes alive. You've been reading an old patent from the 1920s. The guy talks about using flame to better capture atmospheric electricity. And here the test totally confirms it. It's like I have another missing piece of the puzzle. So for my next experiment, I would like to get rid of the Van de Graaff, find a small, lightweight propane torch, and lift it up to a higher elevation, and see how this works for capturing actual atmospheric electricity.
So on this little Atmo motor, I tried something new for connecting the blades up to the positive and negative connection points, and that's this conductive PLA. It's really the first project I've got to use this on, and it works great. And I think it works especially well in an application like this where you're dealing with very high voltage electrostatic electricity. Because even if this is not as good a conductor as copper or something of that nature, it's very adequate for high voltage electrostatic experiments. And it can get right down in there into tight little areas and melt.
Basically, in case you missed it, the PLA he's talking about is a conductive 3D plastic that you can actually print things out with. And like you said, it's not very, it's not as good as copper for other applications, but for high voltage, that's sufficient.
As you can see right around the blades here, what I've done, I've just melted it right down into there in contact with the blade and brought it up to the negative and positive points. So I really like this stuff, conductive PLA. It 3D prints very well. I just used a 3D printing pen. I got this pen for like $30 on eBay, and that allowed me to extrude this right along and connect it up to the blades. So I'll probably be using this pen with conductive PLA on a lot of projects in the future. Anyway, I'll put a link to this on conductive PLA in the video description. I bought mine from CMECNC, and very interesting material, so I'll keep experimenting with it.
Alright, so I also posted links in the chat room of the Super Chat for Windsurfed Machine, which is a basically a static electric generator, and a Van de Graaff generator. These two are pretty impressive machines by themselves, but what I'm basically trying to get to is why I'm putting all these deals out, is that combination of a bunch of these techniques right here, it's what I'm I'm trying to scroll down here and this thing's moving on me. Anyway, you take one of these by themselves and it doesn't seem all that kind of impressive, but I'm going to explain to you here in a minute or so what my idea is on this thing about collecting atmospheric energy. Because of the small amount of, you can get the voltages pretty high, but because of the small amount of current, people don't really take it any further than what they've taken it so far. So what the ionosphere group or the atmospheric group, whichever one they are, those ones right there basically have taken it probably about as far further than anybody else has taken, as far as I know. If anybody knows of anybody who's taken it even farther, I'd like to hear about it. So anyway, I'm going to play this this last one here, and then I'll try to sum up what it is that I'm trying to say here.
Okay, so this experiment's going to demonstrate the capturing of atmospheric electricity. And this is a small electrostatic motor, and I came across this motor in the book Homemade Lightning. And it showed a motor design from 1924, Popular Electrics. And it looked so simple, and I thought, could it really be that simple, folks? So I decided to do a test, and what I've got here is I've got this side will come over here to this 28-gauge copper wire. I'm going to run that up in the air in the hexacopter, and this side over here is grounded. And I'll provide links at laserhacker.com and in the description of this video so you can learn about this. Go to Wikipedia and read up on atmospheric electricity. There's more to it than first meets the eye. It's not just from the wind creating a static effect on the wire. This is really quite the effect, and there's been some patents in the past from Germans and others claiming, you know, up to 1,000 watts of useful power. And I really want to get into researching some of this. Now, there's obvious dangers involved in this kind of thing. Anytime you run up a copper wire into the sky, you've got a Benjamin Franklin type situation going on. So there's obvious dangers, and all the precautions and proper training should be...
Pause for a second. Benjamin Franklin, I also posted a link in there for the kite experiment. Basically, it's a Wikipedia article talking about, in Philadelphia in June of 1752, that Ben Franklin had an article in the Pennsylvania Gazette about basically putting a kite up in the air with some wire and running that down to be able to pull electricity out of the sky there. Well, if you want to look into who actually discovered electricity, it's probably been around a lot longer than that. There's so many different devices out there. The Hauksbee device, the Lord Kelvin device, the Van de Graaff generator, the Wimshurst generator, and all of them basically are building up a static electric charge using basically the same principles of what's going on in the atmosphere and friction of two separate types of materials rubbing up against each other, exchanging electrons and so on and so forth. But the key to all of this right here is they're, like he said earlier, these are like pieces of the puzzle. And if you put those pieces of the puzzle in together, I think you might be surprised at what you could actually accomplish with this type of technology.
Utilized in doing an experiment like this. Okay, so we've got the hexacopter up there in the air, and it's only up in the air about 100 feet. And coming down here to the... atmospheric electricity motor, you can see that it's rotating. Alright, so that's the motor, just as printed in Popular Electrics from 1924. And it said this contrivance would amuse the young electrician, and I'm telling you, it's doing its job, folks. I am more than amused by this. And it actually is a lot easier than I thought it was going to be, so...
Yeah, watching the motor spin, there's a little dead space in there before he starts talking again, so, sorry about that.
Very, very cool. So, very simple, we got one side grounded on the copper rod, we got the little electrostatic motor, and this side going up about 100 feet to the hexacopter. Okay, I want to give a quick book review on three books that I picked up from Amazon. You can buy these three books in a set for $50. The first book is Electrostatic Motors by Oleg Jefimenko. Now, I've read some of this guy's work scattered around the internet, but I went ahead and bought the book so I could get all of the work in one place, and I'm really glad I did. This is a treasure trove of information on electrostatic motors as well as atmospheric electricity. You can see there's a lot of cool diagrams, a lot of cool drawings, motors. This motor here generated 0.1 horsepower, which for electrostatic motor is actually quite a lot of power. And he goes on to here to say that this motor operates from a 6,000 volt power supply as well as from an earth field antenna. On the next page, he shows this little motor here that they were able to operate from a 20-foot pole. It said they tried to do it in front of the physics building, West Virginia University, and in front of the building it would not run there, but out in the parking lot it ran very well. So to run a motor like that on a 20-foot pole is really quite the accomplishment.
Let me just go ahead and flip through some of this book. You can see that it's just got just pretty much every electrostatic motor ever created documented in this book. And toward the end, he goes into some more information on atmospheric electricity. You can see the antenna here and the motor and the ground. Very interesting stuff. There's even a section in the back on how to build your own motors here. And I think this is some excerpts out of a Popular Science or Popular Mechanics. But just really interesting information. I'll just share a couple of things here from the very back. He has a section on the Earth's electric field. And he says here, the near ground or the fair weather electric field is on average 120 volts per meter. This means that if one erects a 10-meter high Earth field antenna, one attains a voltage of 1,200 volts between the tip of the antenna and the ground. Very fascinating stuff. So that's the first book. Okay, so I just want to show you A.D. Moore's Electrostatics. This is the second book in this set. I've yet to read this book, but this book is a treasure trove of information. Very thorough, very well documented, all in high voltage electrostatics. You know, the third one that I've been having a lot of fun going over is this book called Homemade Lightning by R.A. Ford. This book is full of cool stuff. And this book actually had the diagram that I wanted to build up on this very simple static motor with the aerial antenna that you just saw in the video. But this book has a lot of interesting stuff, and I was really surprised to see that it has a section in it that possibly could have connections to the Capanandez devices and some stuff I'd like to try with the Dringer crossover circuit between grounding and picking up earth currents. So these three books make a treasure trove of information on electrostatics, high voltage, atmospheric electricity, etc. So just wanted to share that with you all. It's a great resource for information. Now I want to show you where some of this information, some of this technology could go. Okay, so if you're wondering why I'm excited about this really small electrostatic motor, let me just show you that there could be a whole lot more to this aerial electricity than first meets the eye. This is a really cool website. It's rexresearch.com. And I've done a lot of reading at this website over the years, and he's got a lot of information compiled here on atmospheric electricity. And he's broken down by different inventors and their work, etc. And just wanted to share that website. I'll put links to this website and some of the relevant articles at laserhacker.com. So check this video description for links to all that stuff. But here he's got just this one section is a great example of the quality information you can get here at his website. This is from Science and Invention, February 1922. And it's some information on what they were doing in Germany with aerial antennas and balloons. And the part that I just wanted to share here is that where it says the amount of electrical power that resides in the atmosphere is outstanding. These guys went out and they sent up a single balloon to 300 yards, and they got a constant current, 400 volts at 1.8 amps. Folks, that's a lot of energy. It says, by using two balloons in connection with a special condenser battery, the power obtained was 81 kilowatts in 24 hours. The actual current delivered was 6.8 amps at 500 volts. So we're talking about some serious amounts of energy. And very, very fascinating. So I will just go and show a few other spots, and a few other things from this website that are interesting. Okay, so if you do check out this website, be sure to read the story about Roy J. Myers. In 1912, this guy invented some antenna aerial atmospheric electricity receiving equipment. And there's, I read this a couple years ago, and I was just amazed. I've always wanted to try to replicate it and figure out what this guy was doing. But you got access here to all the patents and everything, so definitely check his work out. Very, very interesting. This guy was a prisoner. And he really invented all this stuff while he was in prison. So, really interesting, fascinating story. Definitely check him out. Okay, there's also this. And you can see here on the antenna that this is a bunch of thin wire spikes. And it's probably to help the corona discharge. But this one, it says the apparatus in the photo produced 300 watts with a collector 2 meters tall. So, a lot of times, folks, it's good to go back, look at what's been done before, and replicate that stuff. Because if I could get 300 watts with a 2 meter tall antenna, that would just be phenomenal. And whether or not I get there, it's a lot of fun experimenting and learning. You sure learn a lot. So check out the links I'm going to include at laserhacker.com. I'll put links to Rex Research and to the appropriate articles that you see here. Very fascinating stuff. And of course, a lot of this stuff reminds us of probably the most well known in this field, and that would be Thomas Henry Morey. And he, of course, he's got a lot of information here on that as well. So this could be more than just a small motor. rotating in a plastic cup. I mean, this we could maybe tap into some serious amounts of practical electricity here. And if you follow along in my videos, you know I'm very interested in how to make these things practical. How can these things actually be made useful and put into use? So, anyway, that's what I'm up to in all this, folks. Just thought I'd share, and let's all keep experimenting.
Okay, so pretty much that's all the links that I posted, with exception, I just posted one from Robert Murray Smith, which is one to really keep an eye on out there, because he's working on some capacitor battery technology. Let's hear what he has to say here.
Hi. So it's been some time since I made a video. You might be wondering what we've been up to. And the reason it's been some time, because we've had a lot of problems we need to solve and a lot of things that we need to do. And we've been working at and working on those things. Now, obviously, we've got the Twizy up and coming. And the main thing about the Twizy up and coming is getting these things made. And it's a real challenge to make such a lot of things. Now, obviously, what would be ideal is if we could find a toll manufacturer, somebody we could give the materials to, and they would produce the devices for us, and we could just slap them into the car. Strangely enough, that's proving more difficult than you would think. So we've been working at methods of getting large volumes of this stuff made in case we can't find a toll manufacturer, but primary option is going to be somebody who can find a toll manufacturer.
Also, if you're interested in doing experiments like what he's talking about, he makes conductive ink that he sells on his website as well. So I posted that link down there so that if you're interested in the research that he's doing, you can actually go over and subscribe to his YouTube channel and help support him and his research. They're also, I don't know, I haven't looked into it recently, but they were making an electric car with electric hub motors for the drivetrain on there. And the battery technology that he's working on is what they were planning on putting into this particular vehicle. But most of all of his research it goes around the use of graphene technologies to make impressive super caps and battery technology, something that can charge and discharge rapidly and such, and be able to last quite a long time as far as holding a charge and such. I'm going to play some more of what he's got going on here.
Actually, the primary option is to buy the machines and make them ourselves, but at $35,000 per machine and needing about half a dozen machines, we just don't have the money to do that. So we have to do other things. And the things that we have to do, really, are the kind of things that I think that the everyday inventor, the person who's doing this stuff in the shed, is going to have to do. And of course, it represents problems, because you're working with materials that aren't originally designed to do the job you want them to do, and so you have to modify them, you have to work with them, and that all takes time. For example, what you can see here is a 5 meter length run of this stuff. It's just ordinary kitchen foil I got from the local supermarket. Then we coated it with a coat of our carbon. And only coat that with a coat of our carbon, we tried all kinds of methods, and in the end, here it for this thing, which is a vacuum spray gun. Then we sprayed the carbon onto the kitchen foil to make our electrodes. So that's what we're doing at the moment. I'm just leaving this to dry, and I'll slice that up into electrodes. So the main point of this video really is to give you an idea of where we are, what we've been up to, and to demonstrate one of the devices to show you the comparable that we're getting for at the moment for our baseline device. So this is what we're doing right now, is making these electrodes in long sheets so we can cut them up to make devices, and we've made quite a few devices out of them. So let me show you a few of those. So when we get our carbon-coated kitchen foil, we've been making various devices out of it. Now, the standard kind of device we've been making, actually, is very similar to this. So they're little pouch cells, really, and these are single layers, clipped up with a couple of gold clips. Electrolyte gets filled in there, and these flat pouches. We've been making these. This particular one, which is about 5 centimetres by 6 centimetres, will last something like 3.5 hours at 10 milliamps draw, something like that. So we're making lots of these things as basic samples, but it's a bit difficult to be able to compare those to where we are with the other things. So, of course, I went out and bought some ordinary supercapacitors, a whole load of them. This is a little 3 farad one, and the reason I'm using a 3 farad one is because I can do it relatively quickly. We've also done these with the 500 farad versions, incidentally. That takes about 10 hours. This one takes about 10 minutes. It actually takes 14 minutes and 3 seconds. So we've been charging and discharging this on the chem station, so we can get an idea what the profile looks like. Now, don't worry if you can't see the graph. I'll put these as slides later in the video. At the end of the video, I'll put these graphs up as slides so you can have a look at them. But essentially, this charges up to 2.7 volts. When you set it going, it drops to about 2.6 or something. It runs for about 14 minutes. And you can see the curve, or you'll see the curve later. It's more or less a straight line curve. It's got a slight edge to the capacitance that you'd expect. So we've been doing these. Now, I can't obviously make this. Not having the machinery to do this, I can't coil them tightly enough, I can't get them into a can, can't seal a can, so many things I can't do with this that I can't actually make these things. Easy enough for me to make these, impossible at the moment for me to make these. So I wanted some kind of fair comparison of where we were. So what I did was, I took one of those 3 farads and sawed the top off. And there's the can. I took all the internals out of the can, it's a little jelly roll. When you unroll the jelly rolls, you get 2 layers of this stuff, and this is the commercial carbon. And it's 6.8 centimetres by 1.2 centimetres, that area of carbon that we've got. So what I did was I took some of our carbon and cut it to the same size and then weighed them so we get a fair weight comparison. Made up a flat panel one, and that's the one that I tested, so I could get a comparison. I also took slices out of this to work out what the milliwatts were. This is about 3 milliwatt hours on this. And if you think about it, that's kind of right. It's in the ballpark of where they describe these things, around about 5 milliwatt hours per gram. So it's kind of the right thing, so we're certainly in the ballpark of where we need to be. But that lasts about 14 minutes, got about 3 milliwatt hours on it, and it's that size to it. Now I'll show you what we did in a minute to compare that so you get some idea of where we are. As I say, we just can't make these at the moment. One of the things I say at the moment is because I have found one of the greatest lessons here is you need an incredible amount of stubbornness to get this sort of thing done. There's an awful lot of people are telling you it can't be done. An awful lot of people won't really help when they should be helping. An awful lot of people are quite obstructive, actually. So you need to be pig-headed and stubborn to get anything achieved. And that's what we've been, really quite pig-headed about it. So at the moment, that's what one of our devices looks like. A nice little flat pack, and we can use that. We only made the other one up as a comparison. And the way we made the comparison was to take the size of this, cut the same size, lay them flat, and then charge and discharge it. Let's have a look at that on the other chems, electrochems workstation. So here's our replication. If I lift that off, then we've got our carbon-coated aluminium, and it's 1.2 by 6.8. So it's the same size, weighs the same, and that's our active material. We're using a neutral salt in this, incidentally. So you don't have to worry about picking it up. You see me picking it up and handling it, that's not a problem. It's an aqueous neutral salt. This one charges to 2.4 volts. So the charge is a bit lower than the commercial, which is 2.7 volts. This one's 2.4. But this one will run for 1 hour and 4 minutes. Incidentally, I set both the discharges on this chemist workstation at the same. They're at 10 milliamp hours. So they were both set the same, they're the same size and the same mass of material, just a different carbon and a different electrolyte to give us this 1 hour and 4 minutes instead of 14 minutes. Now I've actually worked out what that term is in terms of watt hours. There's something else to bear in mind is that when I roll them up, what I'm actually doing is using both sides of the carbon-coated aluminium, so I get much higher energy density because I'm able to use both sides. But if I have flat like this, I'm actually just using one side. So even though I'm just using one side, I'm getting 1 hour and 4 minutes, and actually I get about 3 milliwatt hours out of that, and this gives me about 7.5–8 milliwatt hours. So we're about 2.5 times the energy density for using half of the material that's available to us that we should be using, and we're not. So that's only because I can't roll those up. I just can't get them tight enough to go in a can at the same size. And I wanted a size-for-size comparison under the same load conditions, which we've done. And I'll show you the calculation that I went through there. We'll go up to the office in a minute, and we'll talk about this on the board in a little bit. So I'll talk about the calculation that I did to work that out, and I'll just show you the figures and how long this thing ran for. be honest, that's pretty phenomenal when you think what we're doing is spray coating aluminium on the floor and clamping it under here and giving it one go one time. Obviously what we need to do is make more of our type of devices, that is the pouch cell devices, and we make those because, as I said, we can't yet make jelly rolls because we just don't have the machinery for it. We'd love to, we just don't. But I want to give you a one-for-one comparison. So the size of one side of this material is identical to the size that's in that 3-farad capacitor. We're actually using twice the material in 3-farad capacitor, and we're getting 14 minutes out of it, starting at 2.7 volts. Here we get same size, but half the amount of material being used, and we get 1 hour and 4 minutes starting at 2.4 volts. Again, I'll put these slides up, and we'll go through the calculation in a minute.
Let's see here. Sorry about that, it's a quiet spot in the video. Alright. Well, anyway, if you get an opportunity, go over there and check out his. He's just going to go through some measurements and stuff like that. Basically, why I wanted to put all this stuff together. Posted links all over there in the Super Chat room, so if you can want to share them, with the other people over at People for People Radio for me, I appreciate that. The whole concept of what it is I'm trying to get to. Imagine if you took, instead of just one of these technologies by themselves, imagine if you took, let's say for example, Tesla's radiant energy patent, which essentially is, you know, you put this metal plate up in the air, and so according to the calculations, that it'd be 100 volts per 3 foot or 1 meter or something like that, somewhere around about 100 volts per every 3 feet that you go up. And you get this thing high enough to where the one guy was talking about they only had a 20-foot pole. So anyway, you're collecting up this static charge and you're bringing it down to a capacitor bank. Once that capacitor gets fully charged and it discharges itself across the spark gap, if you have that spark gap in between a primary coil on a Tesla coil, then you can take, if this thing is pulsing only every 2 seconds like the atmospheric group was talking about, you could take that that energy and transfer it to a different form of energy using the Tesla coil technology itself. You know, your primary is actually connected to the earth ground, and your secondary is connected between the earth ground. Wait a second. Your secondary, which is the tower of the Tesla coil, is connected to earth ground, and your primary is connected to earth ground and between a spark gap and your wire that goes all the way up to your plate. So when that charge builds up there, comes down and leaps across that spark gap, it will pulse the primary coil and send out, you know, an electromagnetic field up the secondary, beginning that process. And so the faster you can get this thing to charge up, and the higher the voltage pressure that's hitting every time across this spark gap, the more that Tesla coil will pulse. And so you take all these two technologies in conjunction with each other. You got the radiant energy patent, where you're picking energy right up out of the atmosphere from the ions smashing into the plate and all that kind of stuff. And then between the negative, the ground, and being able to get a high voltage pulse across your primary, now you're changing that energy into basically like a really good AC wave wireless energy transfer. So that's just one tiny little example of what could be done. And that particular example right there, if that's not proof of free energy, then nothing is. Because basically what the Tesla coil is an amplifier that ramps that voltage up. And so nowadays, using things that we've got available for us, electronics wise, we got capacitor technology, we've got transistor technology to where this thing will hold a charge, and then when the voltage gets high enough, then it will make the other side conductive, and that transistor will act like a switch, and it'll pulse this thing and then send that energy out in a different direction. Well, the fact that you can actually drag energy out of the dirt as well, using basically earth battery style technology, where you take a copper coated ground rod and a galvanized ground rod and you pound those into the ground, well, you get basically a galvanic action, out of the dirt that produces just a little bit of charge. And as well as that, if that ground is moist around there, then you could actually get a chemical reaction between these two poles that would act like a battery until that that ground dried up again. So there's one way you can actually pull some energy just out of the dirt alone. So pulling energy out of the air and using that energy to charge up a capacitor bank to pulse the Tesla coil, and then pulling energy out of the dirt, even in small amounts. This is the key that I'm trying to get to, because when people look at these type of technologies, they're not something like you're just going to plug in and run your house with. You got to understand how this energy is moving around before you can put it into a state that you can actually utilize it real time. So imagine if you understand how the Van de Graaff generator works. The Van de Graaff generator is essentially like if you take a wool cloth or something like that and you rub it across a piece of acrylic plastic, you'll build up a static charge. Kind of like when you're walking across the carpet during the certain times of the year, more apt to get a static electric charge, and then you reach out to grab a doorknob and you see a little lightning bolt shoot across you from your finger to the doorknob, which actually would be the ground at that time. And the Van de Graaff generator basically takes a material. It's almost like a rubber band that has a little electric motor that is rubbing around and goes across a plastic pulley that then in turn has some cones that picks up a static buildup off of that. And you get some pretty high voltages out of a Van de Graaff generator. The Wimshurst is pretty much the same thing. It just uses different plates going in opposite directions and actually picks up that same type of charge out of the atmosphere around it. And so now that you know about the voltage difference between being directly on the ground and 3 feet in the air, 1 yard or meter or whatever, the higher you go up, it goes up 100 volts. Now imagine that if you take it up to a point where you take the Van de Graaff generator or the Wimshurst generator up to a point where this voltage potential is a lot higher, then you can get that Van de Graaff generator to put out a whole lot more charge than it otherwise would have. But the thing about it is, if you took and modified one of these Van de Graaffs or Wimshurst generator and built it in the style of a windmill, if you go look at my video, Redneck Wind Turbine, I'm actually going to try to take that and revive it, but this time around I'm going to use it to build up a static charge as opposed to your standard hooking it to a generator head, with the magnets and coils of wire and such. This is a plus, because I talk about high voltage all the time, because people they kind of discount the voltage because it doesn't have the current, the wattage that they think they need to run whatever it is that they're going to run. However, if you go look at the atmospheric group or the ionis group, anyway, the links that we posted in the chat room, basically, they're pulling 9,000 volts out the other end, which they can use to get some actual usable work done. All these things by themselves might not seem that big of a deal, but I'm actually putting together a small antenna using some of the technology that I've been researching for a long time, using things like germanium diodes, which pretty good for picking up like radio signals and stuff. basically the equivalence of capacitor technology and some coiling technology, so that I can run these things through the equivalence of a neon bulb, a capacitor, a germanium diode, and building a little mini circuit that will actually help to assist that energy moving around on the top of the antenna itself. So if the calculations are correct that you're getting 100 volts per 3 feet, then if my research is right, then I should be able to put this thing on 3 feet and at least pick up 100 volts and be able to move that energy around from just 3 feet off the ground. And the higher I put it up, the higher the voltage should go. So with that said, utilizing things that Robert Murray Smith had done, and using graphene technology, and utilizing what Tesla's radiant energy patent taught us, where the Tesla coil, what Tesla's coil system taught us about pulsing, basically we're going to be turning the switch off and on and ramping that voltage up. The higher the voltage that I can get, it's blatantly obvious I don't want to pull a lightning bolt out of the sky, because that's not necessarily going to be safe. But if I can make a lower to the ground, basically a radiant energy collector or static electric ion collector, whichever terminology you feel more comfortable with, nonetheless, if I can get a collection system designed well enough to where it can work as high as 3 feet off the ground, you can imagine where you could take it from there. And taking and being able to use that energy and knowing what to do with it to transfer that energy into a more usable type of energy, such as AC current, even pulse DC for that matter. You can get actual work done with it. You've seen what, you probably haven't seen it yet unless you watch the video, but Laser Hacker, Renstar.org, whatever, those two different people there that run these little atmospheric motors. Now, these atmospheric motors, they don't have a lot of torque, but one of the ones, I can't remember which one done, I think it was Laser Hacker did it, but he built a static motor that actually had some torque to it. And one of the ones that he's got actually had the fan blade on there. So, you're actually getting usable work done, because when that static motor's running, it's basically turning a fan blade, which is pushing air around the room. So you're getting work done with that small amount of power. Now, I say small amount of power, but voltage is pressure, according to what science has told us. So, pressure is what gets work done. And if you understand all these different technologies and ways to store it, that's what Robert Murray Smith's main research is, in the storage of electricity and being able to charge things up. The atmospheric group also using the same type of technology to coat the wiring to give those little points on the carbon, that's a place for the ions to be able to do their job and help exchange electrons and such, and build that electric current going, that electric charge or whatever moving, so that they can charge up their capacitors. Well, if you've ever played around with a Van de Graaff generator, the longer you sit there and let that thing run, the higher the pressure gets up there. And if it doesn't have a path to ground, eventually, if you're within 3 or 4 feet of that thing, it'll find you. I found that out the hard way. It's a pretty hefty charge. But essentially, everything that we're talking about right here is talking about the same type of energy, pulling that atmospheric energy up out of the just right out of the air. The Van de Graaff generator and the Wimshurst generator, they're just two different types of ways to collect it. The Hauxbie device, if you go up and look at it, basically adds some carbon inside of a glass ball. Then when you spin this thing around and rub your hand up against that glass, you could feel a static charge build up on there. And that's just one of many. If you actually look into what Remstar, or I think it was Laser Hacker, Laser Saber, I don't know. Yeah, all these names just drive me insane. But anyway, yeah, he talked about, he posted some links of some of these books that have just about every static motor or static electricity generator ever made that would give you some food for thought if you want to try to develop a system like this. So if you could devise collectors that, would, just set out, and even if, worst case scenario, they were just supplemental electrical systems that trickle-charged battery banks for whenever the power went off or anything like that. Or you used them for real-time power. If you looked at that, once again, you probably haven't seen the video yet, but if you look at the video that Laser Hacker was doing, where he was at the atmospheric group and they were showing a video clip of real-time power, there was actually some high-voltage coronal arc going between that spark gap. That's a lot of power. And that is the key to pulsing that doggone Tesla coil. So if you could pulse a Tesla coil, you could take this energy out of the air, transmit it wirelessly through the air again, and, take and expand on that. Basically, that's what I'm trying to get at, that one of these by themselves might not seem like that big of a deal, but if you take all these things together, you put all these pieces of the puzzle together, you can expand on this technology and make a real-time device using everything that physics and science has already proven. This is proven science, all right? It just hasn't got to the point where, somebody mainstream it's, put it into a real power plant style kind of neat thing there. But it doesn't mean that, and the biggest key is what Robert Murray Smith said a while ago on his podcast that I was playing there, is that the problem that he's coming into is that in order to, make these things in, industry quality kind of where you can roll these capacitors really super tight and fit them into small containers, it takes machinery. It takes a lot of money to do what it is that he's doing. If the people ever want to get to a point where they want to basically not have to pay a power bill or even be able to buy a machine that will supplement their power bill to the extent that they don't have to pay very much money per month or whatever for utilities, then it's going to have to be a people thing. Thanks, Lisa, for sharing those links on People for People. I appreciate that. And so, basically, if you can gather what I keep calling the dream team in your local community, and then you reach out to other dream teams in other community for, sharing research. It's kind of like Lisa just shared these links over there to People for People. So we got two networks right now that just was able to share that information that fast. That's what I'm talking about. If you got a dream team in your neighborhood, and I got a dream team in my neighborhood, and we're working on a project, you'll be able to look in on our projects, and we can look in on your projects. Everything's open source, and we kind of help each other with resources and funding and stuff like that. And we can find creative ways to, as a people, make things that will benefit everybody. Even if it's just to, like I said, to the extent of we make supplementary electrical systems that ease the burden financially for people to not have to be able to pay such a high bill. Well, one of the easiest ways is to teach them how to be efficient to begin with, and so we could share all that little bit of information that maybe somebody never thought about. Something's as simple as, if you ain't using your phone charger, unplug it, because it still has a primary coil in there, and so it's still using electricity even when it's not plugged into your phone. So just by unplugging stuff, you'll drop your bill down. And then by different techniques out there, technologies like the difference between fluorescent bulb lighting or LED lighting. LED lighting would be using less electricity than all these rest of them. But even if you want to stay with a traditional style of lighting system such as tungsten elements, there's technology available that you don't have to use current through the tungsten or, you know, even the nichrome wire that I kept talking about. You know, every doggone material out there has a resonant frequency that it will resonate with. And so if you find the proper frequency for tungsten wire, you can build a circuit to vibrate that tungsten wire so rapidly that it will produce heat without the traditional style. Tungsten wire and nichrome wire are resistant to current flow. So the more current you put in there, the hotter it gets. And that's how your electric heaters work, your heating elements and all your different stuff. But you find the right frequency range to resonate that doggone wire, it will get just as hot as if it had current flowing through it as well. So that's technology that's within our grasp. If we decide we want to get together and figure all that out, you know, you get if you got an electrician or electronics engineer in your dream team group in your local community, You guys bring all these guys and gals bring all these pieces of the puzzle to the table, and you know, like what I'm talking about here today, static electricity, you know, atmospheric electricity, it's all basically one and the same. It's understanding how energy is traveling around, you know, the electron theories and such. You know, how to build up a charge, how to, you know, store that charge. The Van de Graaff generator, the Wimshurst generator, the Lord Kelvin device, the Hawksby device, all of these, and even rubbing your feet on the carpet, you know, pretty much doing the same thing. But one of them by themselves might not seem like that big of a deal, but imagine if you got a windmill, such as my redneck wind turbine that's made out of a 50-gallon plastic drum, and it's designed to catch wind from all different directions, so no matter which direction the wind's going, you know, that thing will still spin. So you get that high up here on the air, and you got a shaft that comes down, and all that shaft does is turn the equivalence of a Wimshurst machine, and it's producing a high voltage static charge constantly while the wind's charging. And if I keep it a little farther off the ground, then that means that the higher I have it off the ground, the more the voltage potential is, like 100 volts for 3 foot, 200 volts for 6 foot, and so on up the line. So if I got it almost to the top where the windmill is, like where the doggone windmill head, the propeller, doggone it, I'm having a heck of a time with words today. The prop, if you got it up there close to that where, you know, you're several yards off the ground or 7 meters off the ground, then that's got more of that charge potential that it can actually grab onto a lot faster and pull real-time power right out of the air just when the wind's blowing through. So while that's going on, and you got the stationary radiant energy technologies like Tesla was talking about that is also doing the same thing, you can guide all these charges into the same system to where, you know, maybe that Tesla coil, when just the radiant energy is going, is pulsing every 2 seconds. But with that Wimshurst generator up on the wind turbine, that thing is pulsing in multitudes times more in less of time, putting a lot more voltage to the system and ramping it up. I could actually see a situation where that, you know, that thing, once you got it going, you know, it would actually, just with the radiant energy portion alone, pulling, you know, energy right out of the air, like the atmospheric group, pulling energy right out of the air. When this thing pulses up and it pressurizes the top load on that Tesla coil and gets all that energy, you'll start seeing quite literally a breakout from that top load, just like you do whenever you see those YouTube videos of Tesla coils firing up. So it would keep amplifying itself to maybe a dangerous point where you could probably literally pull a lightning bolt out of the air. But taking all that stuff in consideration, there's ways that you can contain all that energy instead of just dispersing it out to the air. That's one of the things that I kept trying to talk about. When people are running these Tesla coils, it's a neat toy, it's a neat lightning show, but all of that energy that you're transmitting out, that's just wasted energy. It's just going right back into the atmosphere. But there are methods where you can actually contain that energy. For example, if you go look at a plasma globe is equivalence of a Tesla coil inside a vacuum. It's got argon inside there, and you got the Tesla coil inside the vacuum, so instead of that energy trying to make a path to ground, it's going out there energizing that argon into plasma. Now, if you took, instead of used argon, you used neon, which energizes a lot sooner, and it actually gets a lot hotter. If you've ever grabbed a hold of a neon bulb after it's been running for quite some time, it's got some heat involved to it. Of course, you know, science says heat is light and light is heat, vice versa. So if you've got that going on there, now you can take and expand on that. And now you're getting into the realm of what I was talking about with my plasma reactor. If you energize gas into the fourth state of matter, which is plasma, plasma has a lot of heat at its heart, you know. So, you know, if you got, you know, whatever noble gas you choose to use, it seems like argon takes just a little bit more, you know, in a higher frequency to energize into plasma, but neon, for some reason, doesn't take near as much. You can get 90 volts to energize neon into plasma, and so that's not very much at all. And so if you had a plasma reactor that was vacuumed down with neon gas inside of it, and you wanted to transfer that energy from that plasma that you generate with the voltages, then you could run either a stainless or a copper tubing coil through that system and actually use the copper tubing or the coil or the stainless tubing, either one, as the spark gap. So when that energy is jumping back and forth across that spark gap, that energy that's being produced is actually producing heat as well. If you can see it, there's heat involved. When that finally energizes into the plasma state, now you got that neon plasma or argon or any of the noble gas plasma surrounding that tube and transferring that heat energy through to that coils, the tubing. And so now whatever you circulate through there, then you can in turn transfer that heat from that tubing to, you know, like water, for example. So basically all we're talking about is quite literally just moving energy from one place to the next. But imagine you're pulling this energy out of the air, and you're using that energy to pulse a Tesla coil. The Tesla coil is basically the equivalence of, the plasma globe, which now we're talking about my plasma reactor. Now you took the energy out of the air, you transferred it to essentially wireless energy that was up inside of a sealed container that had, one of the noble gases in there. And because of the frequency of that thing pulsing, is energizing that gas now into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, which is light and heat at the same exact time. And now you have energy in the form of heat that you can transfer out, plus you have radiant energy as well that you can transfer out to different types of electricity. That's the whole thing. All this energy that we're talking about is the same thing. Whether you're talking about static electricity, AC, or DC, it doesn't matter. It's all coming from basically the same soup, you know. And if you understand how to change it, see, science says that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can be changed into different forms. And so that's all we did. We took it out of the air. We changed it to a wireless, basically like a pulse DC or pulse AC. And, we used that wave, that radiant energy wave, to energize gas, changed it to plasma. And with that said, now You got the equivalents of a mercury arc rectifier like they used back in the late 1800s, early 1900s to change Edison's high voltage DC, Tesla's high voltage AC into, let me get this straight here. Tesla's high voltage AC into rectified DC current, high voltage DC, so that you could run elevator motors that were already in place that Edison had put in place. So that's what the mercury arc rectifier was for. It basically was a equivalence of a bridge rectifier, change AC current into DC current so that you can run DC motors. So obviously you can't run DC motor off of AC current, just don't work that way. And that's why you got to have two different types of designs or engineering in order if you want to be able to run an AC or DC motor. But once you got all that down in a simple thought in your mind, that's where you can come up with incredible ideas to change and manipulate and add to and take what is already in existence. Look, folks, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough, and you obviously haven't been paying attention in the mad science radio show, because I've been talking about this forever and a day. If you get your dream teams together, that eases the financial burden of the individual, and you can get things accomplished. That's the whole key. One person can do some pretty amazing things. I've done everything that I've done. I've done with recycled, salvaged, basically junk I pulled out of the trash. Somebody else was going to throw it away, and I seen a useful purpose for it for my research, and so I grabbed it up out of there, and I made all my coils that you seen in my videos, and all the different projects out of things that I salvaged out of junk. And, every once in a while I got to go out and buy a few things. But other than that, for the most part, the majority of everything that I got in my lab is all from repurposed and recycled stuff. And I did that for a purpose, first off, financial purpose. But, the fact that, you're basically, you have all the materials necessary that you can dig right out of the doggone trash that people throw away because maybe something went wrong with it and they don't know how to fix it, and it costs more to fix it than it does to, go out and buy a new one. Or maybe they're just impatient or don't want to, take the time to fix it themselves. But there's a lot of good stuff in the salvage yards and the trash anyway. But I've already begun working on a radiant energy or static electricity receiver antenna, and hopefully after I do some testing I'll get a video up pretty soon about it. And if my calculations are correct, then we should be able to pull energy even if it's only 100 volts from 3 feet off the ground. That's what I'm wanting to do, is closer to the ground that I can get it, the better, because that would make it more plausible for the average Joe. You can't, not everybody can put up a 120-foot tower in their yard and, start gathering up some of that energy right out of the air. But if I can figure out a way to basically take off the store shelf materials and put the designs out there open source for everybody, that they can make little receivers to put wherever they want. Out on your balcony, you got a little antenna, and this little antenna's just picking up some of that energy out of the ground, or out of the air, and you can use the plumbing, as the actual ground itself, and be able to, charge up some batteries or something like that. So, there's free energy right out of the doggone air. That's not a bad thing. Since we're not getting crazy with it, we don't have to worry about pulling lightning bolts down, because, lightning, when that air is ionized, the positive charge up in the atmosphere, it's going to take the shortest path to ground. And if your antenna is the shortest path to ground, it's going to take that. Well, we don't want that, because we don't want lightning bolts coming down into the to the house or your shed or whatever, you know, but knowing that there's a way to amplify even the smallest amount of voltage and current. They sell little circuits out there, little voltage doubler circuits that will take like 9 volts, you know, DC, whatever. You know, actually, these things work from like 3 volts all the way up to 12 volts, these same systems. And so that little deal right there just ramps up the voltage. Now keep in mind, once again, it's not putting the current out. Then that's not what we want at this point in the game. We want that high voltage because that high voltage has pressure, and that pressure is able to leap across a spark gap. Then we can take that energy and use it to make wireless energy transfer. Now these were, if you go back and look at some of my videos, and I've caught so much grief from people, but they didn't understand what it was that I was actually trying to show them. Even though I tried to explain it in simplest terminology, oh, well, I can't run my house with that. Of course you can't run your house with that, but that's a concept. It's a piece of the puzzle that if you build on, you can make a system that you could run your house off of. All of these little anomalies, pieces of the puzzle by themselves might not seem like that big of a deal, but what I've been trying to point out to everybody is you take this piece and that piece and you put them together like I just explained, Tesla's radiant energy patent with a Tesla coil. Now you got a Tesla coil that is sitting there constantly pulsing all day long just with energy pulled up out of the air. And you don't have to do nothing to it. And it's like, if you go look at my video series that I called the Free Thinkers series, I put these techniques in play on the Free Thinkers series so that I could show people, and those who understood what it was that I was showing them, they would take those ideas and run with them. That gizmo that I put together in the Free Thinkers, go back and look at the earliest date of the video. I can't even remember how long it's been, but it's been quite some time. That thing has kept the light on that. It has kept the power circuits in it running for all this time. I think it's been at least a couple years. I'm going to have to, you know, look and see what the original date is. Let me Google it up. I'll Google myself here. Let's see. Do Free Thinkers. trying to type and talk at the same time don't work. Free Thinkers. SHAZIZZ. Alright, let's see here. So, there's like 8 of these doggone deals. And let's see, number 4 was made back in July of 2015. So number 4 was July 2015, and it's 2018 now. Man, that's a long time, folks. That thing's been running all this time. All this time. And all it's doing is what I just explained to you. It's picking, it's using wind power, it's using solar power, it's using earth battery technology, it's using picking up the negative ions, static electricity. It has a equivalence of a Wimshurst as a static rotor in there that spins around when the wind's blowing up there. So it's picking up the ionic charge from the air, it's picking up radio waves through germanium diodes, it has AC capacitors in it, it's got DC capacitors in it, and it has old 12 volt lead acid batteries, most of which, and probably all, are bone dry, and they're still holding the charge. Because if you think of what a capacitor actually is, it's two plates. It's a positive plate, it's a negative plate. And so even if it's bone dry and it has absolutely no electrolyte in it, it's no longer a battery, but now it's actually a capacitor. It still has a negative negative plate, and it still has a positive plate, and the dielectric in between it is quite literally the atmosphere that's in between it. And so this thing has been running ever since. I'm gonna see if I can find the very first video of the Free Thinkers, and I will post that into the chat room so that if you're interested in what it is that I'm saying, you could actually go. Let's see, I can't find the original one. What the heck? Alright, well, let's go to 3 then. No? Yeah. Alright, I'll just go to 3 then. I'll just put number 3 in there. You have to track it back because it ain't showing it to me for some reason. But there's more. But anyway, what I've done in this video series is I've taken people. You had a doggone commercial. And won't you stop it while I'm trying to talk here? That's not nice. Anyway, I'm gonna send Free Thinkers 3 in there first, because that's the earliest one. But it was made June 25th of 2015. So. Do the math. That's quite a long time. And you know, folks, crazy as it is, I guess because either I don't know how to promote a video or whatever, that video's only got 237 views on it. The whole entire series has hardly got any views on it whatsoever. Let's see, there we go. So that's Free Thinkers 3. I'm popping it in the chat room right now. But hardly anybody, either they didn't understand it or didn't think it was worth time, or I just don't know how to promote a video. But the information that was in this series, if people paid attention to what it was I was saying, I took a combination of everything out there that I constantly kept adding to it. Like, for example, you know that heat rises. Did you know that that little turbine that's on top of your roof up there, it doesn't always turn just because it's windy outside? Those turbines are basically set up to, basically suck hot air out of your attic so that your heat don't get too much hot heat in your attic, which is another form of energy that usually gets wasted, put back into the atmosphere. You could turn your doggone attic into a power plant. But nonetheless, science says that cold air falls and hot air rises. So as your attic is getting really hot, that heat wants to go somewhere, and so it rises up through this turbine and spins it around. So even you'll notice these things turning even on days when the wind ain't even blowing. So, if you look in the video, you'll see that there is a black box with some glass on it, and as the sun is beating down inside there, that heat is transferring, going uphill into underneath that thing, and it's causing that turbine to turn. Well, when that motion's going around, guess what's happening? You're picking up, ionic charges out of the air. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be a stationary thing. It's actually because these same process that's going on with the Wimshurst would be going on with anything in motion. The same process with the radiant energy patent that Tesla did out basically is the equivalence of what's going on in the atmospheric electricity group, whatever. I got 10 billion things running through my brain at one time, and I can't get them out my mouth fast enough. My brain's skipping on me. So anyway, if you go look at that series, and you watch it from start to finish, you know, that particular video, let's see. There it is right there. And I got 12 thumbs up on that video. 237 views. Somebody said, don't think that is a star. whatever. Anyway, I get some crazy comments on there. But nonetheless, if you paid attention to what it is that I was trying to show people in there, that thing has been running all this time. It's constantly been running a load. So you got to think, it builds up enough energy to make it through the entire night, and it's constantly pulling energy in at night. When it's windy outside, it's putting more energy in, and even when it's not windy out, even when it's frozen outside, there ain't nothing but ice and snow on the ground outside, it's still going. So all those years that thing has been sitting out there, it's still dragging energy from the, you know, what nature does. And if you watch it all the way up to the last one, I think there's it might be the one where it actually has it's about 7 or 8 foot Tesla coil in there that's being pulsed by a doggone electric fence charger that charges up during the daytime, and it continues to pulse all night, and so it's sending out a wave with it as well. And it has, you know, a little antenna that's picking up radio waves. So if you're in the general vicinity and you're using your cell phone, it's charging into the system. And even if it's only a little tiny bit amounts, you know, coming from here and coming from there. If you go watch my video 9 volt, or even my video unsubscribe, I think is another one that I did with capacitors, where I'm showing you got a huge capacitor bank going into a smaller capacitor bank, and the smaller and smaller and smaller, and you can literally watch as energy, when you fill that system up, you can watch as the energy travels downhill, and as long as the large capacitor bank is full, every load under that are running off of the smaller capacitor banks will stay running real time constant, and all you got to do is every so often put just a little bit of energy back to the system. As long as the large one never goes completely empty, all the ones below it will continue to be full. And so you can pull energy from all different directions. That's what this particular series showed. And hopefully when I get this little deal here, this antenna that I just started working on yesterday, when I get that done and I put a video out about it, you'll see what I'm saying about atmospheric electricity. And so imagine you build a little antenna system that's sticking anywhere from 3 to however many feet you want up in the air, and that's pulling 100 volts. Let's just go with 100 volts. 100 volts is charging up a capacitor. When that capacitor gets charged, a transistor trips the switch and lets that thing pulse out. And even if it's only intermittently pulsing a Tesla coil, and you got a little neon bulb out there that's being energized every time that Tesla coil pulses, then you got to admit that would be a pretty cool little thing for teaching, people about atmospheric energy. And even if it gets to the extent where while it's just standing there pulling enough energy out to run even a tiny little, atmospheric motor. If you can do that with a one, imagine what you could do with an entire system that was set up to grab energy from all over the doggone place. You could put these things, dress them up, make them look like artwork around your yard, but what in reality they are is they're pulling up, what would essentially be wasted energy all around you. Every time somebody keys up on a cell phone or whatever, every time somebody keys up on a radio, two-way radio system, that's an energy wave coming by. We're surrounded by energy, all different types of energy, and so if you're able to grab that stuff right out of the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you guide that stuff into a system that basically works like what I said in that video, 9 volts and even my unsubscribed video, well then now you understand how you can get real-time energy out of what would have otherwise been considered, not worth your while because it doesn't produce enough energy to run your doggone house. Look, there are all kinds of alternative energies out there. There's all kinds of alternative energy devices out there. If you can bring these people to the table and combined all these pieces of the puzzle together, take the best of the best out there, we the people, you the people, can get the free energy that you wanted all along. You know, you can do it together. And when you get these systems built up and everybody and his brother knows that they exist and they really do function like you said they did, that's the whole key. I can show all kinds of links and all kinds of anomalies. I can show you all kinds of testing. You know, when it comes down to manufacturing, I can only do what I'm capable of doing with what I've got to work with. And that's the same thing that Robert Murray Smith is saying in there. You know, it takes money to get to the production stage like the corporations and the companies out there. We don't have that kind of money by ourselves. We're just the average Joe. And, you know, I refuse to ask for donations on this site. I've never asked anybody for anything. I want to share information for free, because when I said free energy, I meant it. I don't mean you're going to have to buy a design from me. Everything that I'm coming out here with and giving it to you, I'm giving it to you freely. You know, and you take this idea and you can run with it. You might come across another idea. If I throw an idea out there and you can get it patented, I don't care. Just as long as it gets out there to the people. You know, if you find a way to get rich off of something I'm saying, I'm happy for you. But that's not my goal here. My goal is to keep my word that I said that, you know, I'm going to study everything that there is to know about alternative energy, and I'm going to share that with that for free to every single one of the power company's customers, so that when their wallet gets thin, they'll have me to blame for it. You know, the technologies that are available out here today, free energy's already been around. There's been super efficiency around. But these technologies get swept under the rug because people want to sell energy. They want to sell electricity. They want to sell oil and, you know, everything else. You know, look, when that generator, when that hydroelectric dam was put together, once it was all done and they finally had an initial maintenance cost that they would have had to cost them to maintain, you know, this deal, they could have quite literally made it as a not-for-profit, for-public utility that you just help to supplement the maintenance cost on it. You know, you together pitch in your pennies in the bucket and you pay for maintenance. But that ain't how this works. These people make a lot of money. They're making a killing off of something that they've been getting for free ever since the first hydroelectric dam has been in play. And you try to tell that to some people out there, some of the indoctrinated mice in the maze, and they will give you a rash. Oh, no, it's not that simple, you know, and they got to get government subsidies because they're not making that much money. That's a big hockahooey, flat out. They got the coal out of the dirt for free. Well, they had to pay for the machinery to get it out of there, but nonetheless, it came from nature for free. So they use coal to burn, to boil water. The same thing with the nuclear power. All these different technologies require dragging something out of the dirt, with exception of the hydroelectrics, which basically just took the water power that was falling down the falls anyway, or it actually built a dam to slow down the water, which that might have interfered some with nature, but nonetheless, there's other ways to do the same exact job without interfering with nature. Grabbing wind power, solar power, you know, hydroelectrics, earth battery technology, atmospheric electricity. I've explained it here ad nauseum. All kinds of methods for grabbing energy. And then once you got that energy, it's what you do with it. It's not that we don't have enough electricity. It's what we do with it. It's how we use it. We can turn that energy into all kinds of different forms of energy. We can store it. We can send it out as radio waves. We can send it out as data on top of radio waves. We can do so much with that. And we understand the science and the physics of, you know, fluorescent bulbs. If you understand a fluorescent bulb, how it functions, you got a preheater in there, and you got a gas in there that's being energized that is taking the UV rays that are produced by that gas to basically get some phosphorescent paint to glow, and you got a light out of what otherwise wouldn't have been a light. You couldn't see the initial deal outside of maybe some plasma colors. Well, you could do the same exact thing with argon, neon, halogen, or xenon, any of the noble gases, even helium. You know, when you energize that into the plasma state, if you got any of these same UV rays or whatever's then going on inside that bulb, you can phosphorus coat the inside of that bulb and get it to do the same exact thing. Get visible light out of the doggone thing so you ain't stubbing your toe in the dark or whatever. But once you get to understanding how all these dang different things work, and if you got somebody in your dream team such as myself that's got a mechanical mind that sees how these things are working and can explain them in simple technology or simple terminology as opposed to the high tech terminology they always try to muddy the water up in any given field. I mean, go look at the doctor field. They got, you know, they write their notes in Latin so that you don't know what you're saying or whatever. You don't speak Latin, you don't understand what the heck they're saying. And then they got all these high-tech terminologies for, you know whatever ailment you got. It's just crazy. Why don't you just bring it down to the simple where the average Joe can understand? And once you got that understanding, then you could take and run with that idea. You can find cures and medicines because it's, you got to know what's going on before you know what to do with what's going on. Plain and simple. So, basically what I explained to you here today was how you can quite literally grab energy right out of the air. And if you understand about coil systems and how to oscillate, which is basically your pulsing, you know, that frequency you keep hearing about, you're pulsing certain frequency ranges, there's so much that can be done with the technology that you have available to you. If you got the right team involved. So if you got a community and you get a group together and you start your own dream team, and you know, even if it's only two or three people, you know, that's where it goes. You guys taking guys and gals research up everything you got. Stephen Gibbons over here at ShazizRadio.com, he's got a resource button that's right up above the radio player. And he has compiled links after links after links, a whole page full of these things. Did a brilliant job on it. The man's spectacular. Before the show even started today, he already found a link to the Ionis. Where's it at, Doug? On it? He's got it down in here somewhere. I'm scrolling down trying to find it. Those are ones I put in. I gotta scroll up. Anyway, he's already found links to, you know, pertinent to the show. Basically, the Ion Power Group, that's what it is, ionpowergroup.com, how it works on Earth. Anyway, I kept calling the doggone thing the Atmospheric Group because that's where I remember hearing it as. I clicked on this link to see what's up here. Anyway, the technology is available. We have every piece of the puzzle necessary. Yeah, that's one. That might be two separate groups. I don't know. Anyway, either way, both links are up there. But basically, you know, we're living in a world, an electric universe, so to speak. We're living in a world where we are quite literally floating in a sea of energy. And if we understand how to use it, we can utilize that to get work done, to be able to live in the same luxuries that we've been accustomed to. And, you know, basically just keep advancing into the future. But this time around, we do it on our terms. This time around, we do it where we have control of the technology. We're not out there trying to sell it to everybody and his brother. I'm not saying you can't make no money with it, because not everybody could build a device that you figure out what device it is, and, you know, they might want to pay you for your services or whatever. You know, reimburse you for your materials and pay you for your services. And, you know, you could actually make a business out of it, you know, for your group. That way then you'll have funding for your group. But even to that extent, you know, I talked about doing a bottle caps for science deal because of the types of plastic that your average soda bottles are made out of. That plastic could be recycled into making things, you know, such as something as simple as a door wedge. You know, you melt it down into a mold, press it into a shape, and then when you want to hold your door open, you kick the little wedge underneath it. Of course, it's already a patented deal, but nonetheless, it's still a useful object, you know, made out of what otherwise would have been recycled. A long time ago, I did a video called 2-liter windmill, where I turned a soda bottle into an actual electric wind generator, and it worked, you know. And so, even the worst case scenario, you guys and gals get together with your dream team and you have some fun and you learn a lot of stuff and you share it with everybody. Share all your ideas that you got over here with Shaziz Radio, and we'll reciprocate by sharing the same. You know, come on the radio show and talk about how your group, you know, has progressed and what all kinds of things you've worked on and things, how you benefited your community. You know, by showing your community, every single community out there, regardless of where you're at, I'm sure that there is some waste going on out there. And if you found a useful purpose for every single thing that would otherwise have gone into the trash, including the trash, if you look at the doggone school system alone, a lot of trash is generated in the school. In, you know, some of it in the form of, you know, like food scraps that could be turned into different types of biofuels. You got all kinds of papers and plastic. If you took that school and you just took the trash from that school alone and had it separated into its you know, materials, that trash could quite literally pay for itself. So, you know, we just have so many options available to us. But to get people into the right mindset, you know, that's the trick. That's the hard part. You know, it blows my doors off that we have all these possible solutions and answers available to us, and yet we can't seem to get people motivated. You know, we can't get this world motivated into using everything that we've been given efficiently so that everyone on this world can actually benefit from, you know, everything that there is. You know, nature wastes nothing. People do, though. Mankind wastes a whole lot. And so with that said, I'm going to take a quick music break, and then I'll come back and refresh. You know, if anybody wants to join me on here, add me on Skype. And
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Okay, and I'm back. So, basically, I got my little antenna that I worked on yesterday. And, Just holding it in my hand, all I got to do is put my hand on there, and I get nearly a half a volt just by putting my hand on the doggone thing. All right, I actually jumped right up there to half a volt. Actually, go a little bit, get a little bit higher than a half a volt. Anyway, that's just putting my hand on there. But if this thing was set up like I'm talking about, you know, where you know every 3 feet, is 100 volts. I should be able to, if science is correct in what they're saying about the, 100 volts every 3 foot, I should be able to pull at least 100 volts out of just 3 feet off the air, just out of the atmosphere itself by using this particular setup right here. And if it's connected down to, earth ground and then to a spark gap or whatever, spark gap and then earth ground, when the capacitor charges up, then it'll actually leap across that gap and I can get some work done with that dang voltage pressure. So either way, I'm going to do some more testing on this thing, and when I think I got it good enough, I'm going to do a video on it and share it with everybody and share, how I put it all together and all that. You know, I honestly believe that, with what technology is available, matter of fact, got a friend out there, he's working on a pretty much a similar situation, pulling energy out of the air. I won't talk about that here on the show because it's his idea and I want him to be able to, be the one to get the credit for his research and everything. But, nonetheless, it's still, if he does what he was talking about doing, you would be able to make basically materials, systems that you could actually turn your entire house into an energy collection system. Like the siding on your house or even different, furnitures you might have, lawn furnitures out there. You got lawn furnitures that are gathering up energy just 24/7, whether the sun's out or not. It just gathers up energy and uses to maybe light a pathway or something like that. All of this is proven science. It's just taking these pieces of the puzzle and putting them in the right order in order to, be able to use it to get work done. That's simple of it. So, I don't necessarily understand why the average Joe wants to create such a ruckus when you try to talk about free energy. Right now, the terminology over unity and zero point and all that kind of stuff, that kind of muddies up the water. When you start talking about perpetual motion, and they want to try to bring the laws of physics, thermodynamics into saying why it is it's not possible, And you got all these people trying to tell you why it's not possible. But zero point energy is real. You know, you didn't put nothing into the air blowing that turned your turbine. You didn't do that. Nature did that. So you didn't put anything to it. You just used what was already happening to get some work done. Same thing with the solar. You didn't put nothing into the sun. It's zero. You put zero amount of energy into that sun, and you was able to extract energy from what the sun is actually doing. And you can extract energy in multiple ways to what the sun is doing. You know, you can extract heat, and you can extract radiant energy. There's different, light waves that come down that do different things, UV rays or whatever. You know, all of these different things that the sun's doing 24 hours a day is free energy. What the wind is doing is free energy. You know, the vibrations in the ground, the chemistry in the ground. And if you do this respectfully with nature, then you ain't got no, you know, hazards to nature. You're not interfering with nature. You're just like going along for the ride, kind of like getting in the canoe and riding down the river. You know, you didn't take nothing out of that river. You just got on and went for a ride. Now, when you want to go back upstream, you got to figure out a few other ways to do that. Otherwise, you're going to paddle your way upstream. But what if what if the wind is blowing one direction, but the doggone river is going the other direction? So you ride down the river with the river flowing one direction, and then you ride back up the river against the stream with the wind blowing. See? It just depends. You know, it's all possibilities. You know, and of course it's probably not going to be a raging river unless you got a typhoon behind you blowing you, 100-mile-an-hour wind to get back up that river. Then you have to think about some, different methods. You know, maybe you got some solar panels on your canoe, and you're using it to run a little electric trolling motor real time, you know, charging up a battery so you're able to go upstream. It's just common sense, you know, figuring all that kind of stuff out. You know, atmospheric electricity is just one. It's just one little piece of the puzzle. But there is quite literally energy that can be pulled right out of the air, and including energy that we've already used. Somebody at a power plant generated some electricity using some coal or whatever, or they used nuclear power, or they used hydroelectrics or even thermoelectrics, and they sent that out there and sold you that energy. But all that energy, is used. You use it to plug in your telephone, and you call somebody across the wire, which is also producing some energy, wasted energy on the outside of the wire. And the radio, like an old CB radio or any ham radio sets, they're keying up or they're sending out a signal, which is more energy. Your local radio station or whatever is putting out a wave that's coming out and catching your antenna and everybody's antenna. Anybody within range of that wave can pick up that radio wave. And then if they understand what to do with that, they can turn around and store some of that energy while you're listening to your favorite radio station. You're charging your doggone battery up, for Pete's sake. You know, people don't seem to... I don't get it. I don't see why they can't grasp the concept is so simple. Is that, you know, if you understand how energy is actually traveling, if you understand how to store it and basically use it for later use or whatever, there's methods. I was looking at a picture on that atmospheric electricity page there on Wikipedia, and there's lightning bolts. I mean, massive lightning bolts in the background of this picture. There is so much power available out there, it's just mind-blowing. And people want to sit there and argue with you till they're blue in the face that there ain't no such thing as free energy. Well, they obviously didn't pay attention in science class, otherwise they're either a troll or some sort of shill or whatever. Government don't want you to get off the power grid because they get tax money. The power company don't want you to get off the grid because they get money for the electricity. And the less customers they have, the less money they make. It's blatantly obvious. They don't want to give you a cure for the common cold because they want to sell you cold medicine. That's how it works. That's unfortunately how it works in today's society. But if you want to get this to the people, then you got to bring it to the people. You got to bring it to them with your dream team. Show them by example. You know, get together and have alternative energy conventions or whatever. Get together at your local church or your school and show all your experiments and invite other people to join your dream team and tell them, you know, our ultimate goal is to put free energy in people's hands. Give them the option that if you didn't want to pay the power man, you get build you this nifty device right here, and at the very least be able to supplement your electric bill. That's the whole thing. You know, some people may not want to mess with it. They'd rather just they make enough money and they don't mind paying the power company to do the work for them, and that's fine. But even at that, even if you was the richest man on the planet and you had all this money and all this technology and you was able to have a free energy machine that would give you free electricity just from what the world was already doing, I mean, common sense dictates you why pay for it if you can get it for free? That's the whole thing. You know, you got on the river, unless it's on private property, you didn't have to pay to get on that river. You put your boat on it, you ride downstream, woohoo, you got work done, you had fun. Now, in that particular instance, unless you got somebody waiting downstream for you, you're going to probably have to paddle back upstream, so that means you're going to have to do a little work. then that would be an excuse for somebody to say, well, then that makes it not free energy because you had to paddle back upstream. That's the kind of crud you have to deal with because of the knuckleheads out there that they call trolls or even shills or whatever you want to call them. Anyway, we have options to us. We have solutions available. There are tons and tons of solutions. And I'm bringing in solutions to the table, just like everybody else out there with all these other different radio networks that podcast and rebroadcast our stream and join us, real time and all that kind of stuff. All these folks out there that are sharing links and stuff, I don't understand sometimes why, it's so hard to get messages out. Like I mentioned that particular video of Free Thinkers, 200 and some odd views, and it's been up there for a long time. And everybody out there in the alternative energy community, you would think that they would want to be looking for every single piece of the puzzle available. You would think that they'd want to, try to take all these pieces of the puzzle and put them together. There's some out there that does some pretty impressive stuff. You know, Laser Saber, he prints out some really cool looking 3D printed motors. He's got some really super efficient motors. It's been running for quite some time. We need more people like that. We need people that have resources like that to, help out, making parts or something like that. You know, imagine if each of your dream teams had tools that they were capable of 3D printing stuff. You get an idea. Instead of everybody poo-pooing your idea, instead they say, okay, well, I'll print the part up. You test it out, and we'll see whether or not it's worth going any further. So, That's what we have options available to us. One person doesn't have enough money for an entire machine shop, but I bring my tools and you bring your tools, and together we get some work done. That's what I've been hollering about all these days, is I'm trying to get everybody to work together. That's the hard part. It ain't that we don't have the knowledge available. At some point in time, they're going to accidentally put free energy on the table. They're going to put the wrong device on the table, which essentially when they figure out what they just did, they'll try to figure out a way to have a recall on it and basically tell you something's wrong with it, so you send it back. You know, like there's been stories about people who had carburetors put on their car. They bought this car, and when the industry found out that this thing was incredibly efficient and they had to try to recall them all back, you know, they ended up coming basically getting it from them. Well, there's going to come a time, and I think we're already there, like the Fisher and Paco and the Samsung washer motors or the direct drive brushless DC motors or whatever. You spin those backwards, you got a generator. Now, keep in mind that whatever RPM you spin those is going to determine the output frequency of it and the voltage of it. But if you understand what I've been saying all along, you can still turn that doggone energy into usable energy if you're not trying to use it in the conventional sense like a standard generator head. Gerard Morin out there, you know, he's pretty frustrated with the world, so he's... some of his videos get pretty lively on the language issue, but he's been trying to share pretty much the same type of thing with me, with everybody out there, that basically he's calling it's electricity radiation instead of what we actually think it is. And he takes a generator and he puts that energy into a huge transformer, 50 kV transformer, and then drops that energy down to a 25 kV transformer. Basically doing exactly what I was doing in my video called 9 volts or unsubscribe. Was that if you understand how that energy is traveling and you get that that big transformer filled up, all you got to do is keep a little bit of energy going to it and the bottom one will stay for running real time loads. And so until that that large one gets empty, the one smaller will continue to stay full. Adding all those concepts together, you could take that same exact washing machine motor that you can take those motors and you can hook them up to something, and you can hook a 100 watt light bulb to them and you can sit there and spin it and you can feel how hard it is to keep it going. Or you could hook it up to, you know, like a gasoline engine, and you could make a generator out of it. It'll run that load. But you see where that lens effect slows that thing down and makes the generator have to work harder. But nonetheless, right straight out of the box, connected to a lawnmower motor, you got a generator. No modifications necessary. It'll run a resistive load like a light bulb. But if you think past the box, outside the box, you can change that energy into a completely different state of matter, such as plasma. Energizing any of the noble gases into plasma state. And now, you've just changed that energy to where that energy is not going to feed back on that generator, so it's not going to have to work any harder than it had to generate the power that you're using out of the deal. It's just whenever you try to put a direct load onto that, that's where you get the problems. When you're not trying to put a direct load on and you're sending that energy, you're taking the energy off that you want, and you're changing it to a completely different form of energy, and then from that point on, you can take that energy back into usable current again, you know, on your terms. That's what I've been trying to say. So, atmospheric electricity, old used washing machine motors, basically taking the Van de Graaff generator idea and the Wimshurst generator idea, changing it to, instead of a hand crank for the Wimshurst, you got a wind turbine turning that thing. Constantly making high voltage that they could be stored, use it for that discharge to be pulsing at the proper frequency to pulse Tesla coils, energizing gas into plasma. It's unlimited. It's what I've been saying all this time. It is completely unlimited. It's only limited by your imagination, what you could actually achieve. That's where your dream team comes in. You take all these brilliant minds, you take their talents, you share your resources together, and you do things for the people. And don't ask the government for permission. Just do it. You know, just make it, prove it, You know, if you want to engineer an engine that runs on pure distilled water, then the physics are there to do just that. But you got to bring people to the table that aren't stuck in their indoctrination to the extent where they want to argue with you about, oh, this won't work because the laws of thermodynamics. Ridiculous. It will work if you specifically engineer it to work. That's the whole thing. Sure, it's not going to run like your normal internal combustion engine because it's not designed to run like your normal internal combustion engine. But once you understand the fact that everything has a thermal breakdown, then you know where its failure point is. Once you understand that, you know, if you can't compress a liquid, but you can take that liquid and boil it into steam, and now it's no longer a liquid, now it's gas, and it is compressible. And you understand the fact that water is hydrogen and oxygen, and you know how to separate this using multiple different processes, you know, excluding electrolysis, which is the least efficient, but even given that, with the least efficient manner, you can use high voltage to do the same exact job. So you could separate water molecules that whenever they do their job as far as use for energy, when they're done doing their job, you still have a water molecule. It's just broken up. And you use that reaction, that energy release that happens whenever you, because water is the most stable molecule. It don't like to be separated. And when it separates, it releases electrical charge. When it recombines, it makes an electrical charge. Look into it. You'll find out I'm not blowing smoke. It's it's proven science. So we have all these options available. You take in, you could build a system to run hydrogen on demand, run basically the equivalent of an internal combustion engine, that you could then in turn run a generator head to produce a massive amount of high voltage that you could then in turn exchange into plasma, turn that plasma into light, turn it into heat, turn it into, you know, other types of energy. Looks like Ted's calling in. How you doing there, Ted?
I'm good, Shazitz. How you doing? How's the radio show go today?
Well, we're live right now. It's going all right, I think. But I'm glad you're here because I need to take a breath. We can talk.
All right. Well, I just thought because I was excited. My buddy told me he might be working on that little generator thing there a little bit. And, you know, it's just exciting because, to me, getting on that electricity.
Well, today I've been talking about atmospheric electricity.
Well, I just was thinking it's wintertime again, and that's when I start really thinking about electricity the most.
All right, well, maybe today's show might have been really good for you, because what I'm talking about is atmospheric electricity. There is an equation out there or whatever. There's a mathematical deal says for every, like 3 feet off the ground is 100 volts. And if you understand how to capture that 100 volts, you know, you could basically take this energy right out of the air. It's already proven science. You know, Laser Saver's done it. RenStar.org has done it. The Atmospheric Group or Ionic Collectors, whatever. There's tons of links in the Super Chat room of all this stuff. But nonetheless, what I'm trying to point out today is that these types of static electricity that they're talking about and running these little static motors, all this can be expanded on. You could actually build a high voltage engine, powerful motor, whatever, that would actually have a lot of torque. I think it's Laser Saber. I think he's already proven that. He's got one that's got some pretty impressive torque. But either way, once you understand how all this energy is traveling and how you can store it and how you can manipulate it and use it to pulse coils and stuff, you can take not just one of these. You take the static and you mix it with the Van de Graaff or the Wimshurst, the Tesla radiant energy patent and the Tesla coil. You got like 5 different designs there just alone by themselves. with all the different types of materials that we have available, with all the different types of technologies available, transistor technology, rectifier technology, put all these things together, you could quite literally build a system that sitting close to the ground, or even if you want to move it up higher off the ground or to raise the voltage up, you could actually make it an adjustable voltage generator. You could pull energy right out of the air. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's already been done. It was done back here by Ben Franklin with his key test or whatever, his key experiment, where he flew the kite up there. Of course, if you go to Wikipedia, they'll probably say he supposedly did, and somebody else probably did, or whatever. Nonetheless, I don't like Wikipedia because they got a biased view, and they all are a bunch of think-they-know-it-all kind of people, but nonetheless, I still check in to see what they're saying. Sometimes they got some good information, but most of the time, it's disinformation as far as free energy, because if you go Google up free energy on Wikipedia, they'll tell you every reason under the sun why it's not possible and talk about perpetual motion and all that kind of jazz. You know, it's, I don't understand why the world has got to be like that.
Let me jump in there. I like this atmospheric stuff. I like the idea of capturing some voltage, then, you know, using you know, modulation style circuit. What's that one you like? The Slayer exciter circuit?
Yeah.
That kind of circuitry, you know, basically getting your availability of the higher voltage at that point, you know, using maybe three phase DC rectification kind of thing, pulling in, being able to eventually transmute that into the 120, you know, well, 60 hertz signal.
If you take a little transistor, you make a circuit similar to what the Slayer exciter circuit is. That Slayer exciter circuit will work anywhere from 3 volts up to, I think, 12 or more. You know, they run them at 100 volts. But nonetheless, it depends on the size of your transistor. But you can make a little miniature version of it on a little tiny circuit board, hook it to a radiant energy, you know, basically an atmospheric energy circuit that you could pull energy right out of the ground, to use that to pulse that little circuit. It'll turn that switch on and off, and then pulse coils with it, and you just change it to wireless energy at a higher voltage, higher frequency. So you can step it up. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm talking about.
I can see how folks might think that that's not, well, where's the application there? But with capacitance and being able to fill them up, fill up capacitors using this kind of energy, I mean, that just shows the potential. Like, well, there's real amperage and discharge of capacitance at certain microfarads for sure.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Even at the extent where you turn that energy into heat, you know, anytime there's a lightning discharge, if you can see it, there's heat involved. And heat is one of the things that everybody's, you know, worries the most about, but needs a lot. You know, you need heat to keep you warm in the wintertime. So why not take junk electricity to produce heat instead of using a lot of current? Just use junk electricity. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah, exactly. And even without the need to reference earth ground or have real current, I think using frequency, using what you can get off of this layer exciter circuit from the air, if we were to, like, you know, I've talked to you before about what I think about these things, and if people were kind of united on a project, like, okay, everywhere in everybody's hometown, there's a Lowe's. And at that, or somewhere around, basically, because that's the way Lowe's operates. They put them nationwide. They put everybody in there. And even if there isn't, you got one of these local stores, go to the local store and get, you know, the hot water element replacement for your hot water tank. It's a little nichrome wire, like, horseshoe-looking element thing. And you put that thing, you know, I mean, there it is. That's the answer to the heat. Right there, that could make, if you think about it, there's the answer to electricity, because how do they make electricity in the plant? They make it off steam power.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you got that element, and you take high voltage, high frequency pulsing, and you get that element hot, and it's generating heat off your high voltage, you've created it. That right there is enough that it doesn't matter, okay, that ain't going to get everybody off the grid tomorrow. That's not the point. The point is growth of science together. And the growth of science together, when we're starting to use nichrome and frequency to fire these elements, then the potential for us to be a little bit warmer,
have a little bit more electricity, a little bit cleaner, will be right there, 100%. Because when you use water, when you're using a high voltage signal from the air, and then you're using water to spin a turbine, you're really, you know, that water is going right back into the universe or in the atmosphere of the planet to be recycled.
Yep.
You know, it's not really a wasteful thing. In a way, if you're using like crappier water to do it, there you could probably even be cleaning the water as it's having this process go on.
See, I like that you just said that. I like that you just said that, because there's a method by which you can actually purify water right there. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. That's brilliant.
Well, I mean, it goes back to what you told me a long time ago. If I mess with the Beckett oil burner igniter and the right kind of frequencies and the right kind of voltage, I could fire, you know, nichrome wire off DC pulse.
Yep.
And I have yet to be able to do that. But to be honest, I haven't really sat down and tried to do it yet. And
well, we did it.
I haven't been able to build it in my mind yet.
Completely. We did it with tungsten like in a vacuum. It's really simple to try. Go get you an old headlamp out of a car that is burnout. You wait till somebody has a headlight burnout, and put one end of it on one leg of the Beckett oil burner igniter, and put the other end right directly to earth ground, and watch that light bulb light right back up. Because at the frequency range that that's running at, it's able to, because it's high voltage, leap across that broken element and cause that element to heat up anyway. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So, it's not that that light bulb is not a waste. You could still recycle that old light bulb. At the right frequency, you could get it to bright, get as just as bright as it would be as if it was brand new, hooked to a DC battery, whatever, just like it was when it was in your car. That's all we're talking about. Is once you understand how that energy is traveling and how to manipulate it, you know, the AC current, unless it's at a really high voltage, it can't leap across the gap. All right, and that's why all your light switches aren't, you know, shorting themselves out and coming sending your lights on. But at a higher frequency, it would leap across the doggone terminals of that switch, and your lights would be on all the time. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah, absolutely. When I've watched people's videos of using old light bulbs or even working light bulbs and using a high frequency,
yep,
they'll light them, but they never seem to get the full ignition. Like, they don't get hot. They just kind of, like, they get energized to a point, but they don't get full effect. You know what I'm saying? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, but that's because, and that's the same thing with the one I told you about, that's because it's not going at the proper frequency. If you understand exactly what the resonant frequency of tungsten wire is, then you can vibrate that using that frequency wave. That's what's happening in there anyway. It's no longer current that's actually doing it. It's because when that high frequency wave is going through there, it's getting it hot. And that leap across the broken element is producing plasma in the halogen that's inside the bulb or whatever gas they use in whichever bulb they got. It's energizing that, and that plasma is heat that's also adding to that tungsten glowing. So when you figure out the actual resonant frequency of the tungsten or the nichrome wire, you can send that high voltage, high frequency at that range through that wire, and it will get red hot just like it would have if it was plugged into the regular load. See, both of those rely on current. They resist current flow. That's why they get hot. That's why resistors get hot. All these resistors that you've got and all the deal, that when you got current flowing through them, they get hot. And certain you have to have really heavy duty ceramic style, you know, giant resistors, and because if not, then, you know, it'll burn the circuit out. But you got to slow that current down, and it absorbs that and basically wastes the energy in the form of heat. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
You can recapture that. That's heat. You know?
It seems like a good project for the Earth in general to work on is heating the nichrome elements that are used in water boilers.
Yeah.
Using, like, I feel like if somebody really hit the nail on the head with that,
I mean, I love the idea of using certain frequencies, like whatever, 13.8, and vibrating and making water, you know, shining lasers into it to intensify it. But at the end of the day, you've got hydrogen gas. You know, I mean, for me, most interestingly enough, humans require, like, are requiring heat to do everything. Like, when it comes to our power, we're using heat. Like, there is, as far as I know, you know, the main way...
Heck, our body like, is a thermoelectric generator. Did you know that?
What is it, bro?
I said our body is a thermoelectric generator. Our bodies are capacitors. So, we eat food, and that's free energy to us. Anyway, sorry I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I just feel in my heart, like, you know, with what we're talking about for years, just electricity in general, I mean, the idea to me is the simplicity of everything, the most efficient means possible is the way that, you know, I think the earth should run. And so I think to have that effect where we're heating water with DC pulsing, and you're going to do a whole show on getting voltage from the air, well, what are you going to do with it? Well, like I say, if you just could take that and reach the right resonant frequency, like you believe also, and touch nichrome wire with it, that would be, and then you have a reference to earth ground, that would be enough to basically start from there to run any system that you wanted, including your whole neighborhood or community,
yep,
or just your own house or whatever you needed. So I like to start at square one with things, and like square one really is like learning how to capture voltage from the air. But everybody wants to be like, okay, great, now everybody's got videos on it. You can do this. It's a fact.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a known fact. You can get voltage from the air. And people are doing all kinds of cool little things with it. But what I'm saying is that is the place people need to start. And then from there, well, you got to do all this crazy stuff. Well, it could be just as simple as one source of electricity, an antenna and an earth ground, then, you know, a voltage modulation system, and then a nichrome wire, and then everything else from that point on runs off of basically steam.
Yep. That's
not really far-fetched. That isn't like a 1920s technology steam. No, that's today. That's what,
yep,
you know, big buildings are running on, steam. That's what, you know, institutions run on, steam. That's what, you know, corporate, you know, electricity runs on, steam. It's like you have your own steam, and you've got your own whatever you want. What do you want? Do you want to run equipment directly off steam? Like, think of the Amish people. They're really good at still running equipment mechanically. So you could use steam to run it mechanically. Now, that is 1920s technology.
Well, yeah, but back in the old days, they used to have radiator systems that were the heating system for schools. That was steam.
They still do. We have a steam plant right here in downtown. They burn a bunch of coal every day to make steam, and they pump it through the university buildings.
Yep. So there you go, man.
I mean, that's what I think is, okay, so we've built antennas. A lot of people have built antennas to capture voltage. Can we take it to the next step? Can we make voltage into hot water? Because if you can make voltage into hot water, you don't really need to worry about anything after that. It would all fall into place either mechanically or as power generation itself, or as, you know, just physical heat.
So basically, I did a video called Plasma Water Heater, which tells you how to take that voltage and turn it into hot water. But
I tell you what, today I was really pumped about the Coffee Mate hot water heater, my Mr. Coffee Pot.
Yeah.
It was keeping 300 feet of PEX. It was getting it real hot.
Yep.
The second I unwound all the PEX and added 300 feet more PEX, and cold water was never able to overcome it. Too much heat, and then it's just a little too cool out now. There's too many. It won't get to that threshold.
If I was to take all of it,
wrap it back up, it will heat back up again. So I don't know what to do about it.
Well, it'll take longer the bigger the volume, but it will catch up. I guarantee you that. I mean, like I said, I was out in that redneck hot tub in the wintertime when there was snow on the ground, no insulation under the tub, no insulation above the tub, and while it took probably 4 to 6 hours to get it up to operating temperature, once it got up there, it didn't take nothing to maintain it. So,
well, when it was all coiled up, it got hot in 24 hours.
Yeah,
real hot. It was plenty hot. But now that I've uncoiled it, it's been going for about 30 hours, and it still hasn't got warm yet. So I don't know.
Well,
I'll let it go.
If that was in the floor, like a concrete floor, if you had it winding back and forth in the concrete floor, that concrete would act as insulation and hold that heat in and put it back down to where it was again. So
yeah, see, it's all open air. I don't know if it's going to be able to catch up or not.
Yeah, well, you got to factor in that if you got enough surface area by stretching it out as far as you did, you basically turn it into a giant heat sink, and so you're losing the heat to the atmosphere. But if
it's going to work. I'm going to move it up into my barn where I live, and man, it's going to work up in that barn. I'm going to be toasty. You know what I'm saying? I guarantee it. So I do appreciate that very much. But I would be interested in the plasma technique of heating water, because if I could drop something in to that tank now, it's all set up. I'll just take the Mr. Coffee pot away from that and go work on it up in my barn to heat me. Mr. Coffee is going to be plenty to heat my barn. My buddy said I got like 100 or 200 square foot area. I don't got very much. I just live pretty modestly. But it's like, he said that, and I said, that is going to heat it, I guarantee it.
Well, I also believe that if you was to use one of those elements as a spark gap, and you got a material that's not going to deteriorate rapidly with, every time you get a high voltage charge across there, it can have the tendency to eat into metals or whatever. But done properly, you could actually use that doggone element, the outside of that element, as a part of the spark gap, and that high voltage discharge coming across there is not only putting energy through that, but it's also putting heat to that as well. And so imagine with that the plasma water heater that I was talking about, imagine you had that same element, multiples of that same element, but you're only going to run one of them, and you got one that you plug into your outlet for your normal 110, 120 volt, way that you run a coffee pot element. Keep in mind that this is all inside this chamber that is surrounded by neon gas. And the probes that are coming into the neon gas and the spark gap actually goes across these coils. And so when you're picking up static energy out of the air, the only time that the house power would ever have to kick on is when the temperature of that element dropped down below a certain point, and then it would start draining off the power. So days when you got a lot of static energy being built up, and it's energizing that gas into the plasma state, as long as there's plasma in there, if you can see the light on, then it will maintain that heat as if it was plugged in, which at this point it's not plugged in. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
So, you're getting a two-for-one deal. And if you take that same exact system, so you got basically the equivalence of Tesla's radiant energy patent picking up static electricity out of the air. You got the plug for your normal outlet, because in case the wind ain't blowing and you're not getting enough static charge, it'll kick on the regular power, which at that point you could use a battery bank and a little inverter, just because you're only going to have to use it a little bit here and there. You won't have to use it all the time, because you'll be getting constant static energy depending on how high your system's up in the air, will determine on how much static energy that you're able to get and the way that you pulse it and so on down the line. So essentially you would have the equivalence of a Tesla radiant energy patent, a Tesla coil, which is like the up inside of a plasma ball, those little toys with a little lightning in there, that's producing the plasma. So your static electricity from your air is pulsing the Tesla coil, which is energizing the gas into plasma, transferring that heat through your system that only has to be plugged into the wall, long enough to catch up to it, or basically when you very first started up to get it up to operating temperature, and that plasma will be enough heat to maintain that temperature, so you won't be using power off your bank anymore. But either way, now you've transferred that energy from the air, you've transferred it wirelessly into any of the noble gases. I'm thinking neon would be the best because it energizes into plasma at lower voltages. And then you're transferring that heat energy to your coil system, which is your coffee pot elements, multiples of them all stuck together, you know, circulating through each other. So heat's transferring from one element all the way down through the other elements. And then you have the equivalents of a windmill that is turned in either a Van de Graaff style generator, a Wimshurst style generator, a Lord Hawkesby device, or a Hawkesby device, or a Lord Kelvin. That's with rain dripping down. So you could pull energy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year from whatever's going on out there, and continuously keep this thing energized into plasma just using static electricity that the environment's already producing. You see what I mean? Storing it in capacitor banks, allowing them capacitors to charge and discharge, and using transistor technology, you can actually speed up or slow down the frequency to whichever range you want. You see what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, it's only limited by your imagination is what I'm trying to say. Any thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, taking transistor technology to modify the frequency is, that's I think the key to it all.
Yeah, you got variable capacitors that can change the frequency. You got potentiometers that basically regulate the flow of power into the transistor circuit, and so you can sit there and adjust these things, tune them just like you would a radio station or something like that. You know, the old variable capacitors, those were used in radios back in the day to regulate that wave as it's coming in, to adjust it, you know, up and down, and worked out real well. You know, it's all based on real science, proven science. It's not even debunkable, man. See what I mean? There ain't no way you can deny it. If you can't find free energy, you simply ain't paying attention. And when we put all these things on the table, these are all pieces of the puzzle. You see how I took and went and put all these different technologies in together to produce a generator that was just pulling energy right out of the air. When the wind's blowing, that's a plus. When it ain't blowing, it's still a plus. See what I mean?
Can you do a video of how we can make the DC take 12 volt DC voltage and then we can, because we can easily, in my opinion, keep one battery or two batteries filled. Anybody can do that, even off the air, without needing a solar panel. It's like, Can we take the 12 volt coming off of your standard deep cycle marine battery and resonate nichrome wire? Or basically what I'm going with now, because it's availability, is the element for a hot water, a replacement element for a hot water heater.
Well, they have on the market.
Are we going to really need such high frequency that we're going to need like logic boards to operate them instead of just variable, you know, capacitors and what, or variable capacitor and a potentiometer?
Using different sizes of capacitor depending on what size it is, like it's obvious a little tiny capacitor is going to charge up quicker and discharge quicker than a larger capacitor. You see what I mean? So you can time it out with capacitors, you can time it out with the width of the spark gap. You know, it's all, you've got somebody who's really good at math, you could figure this out really fast. But they sell frequency generators. Now, these frequency generators, they don't put out much voltage for testing purposes-wise, but nonetheless, they will run you through a range of frequencies. So on a smaller scale, you've seen in this last video that I did how I was able to energize neon gas into plasma. And so, with that said, the voltage coming out of that thing was insignificant. I was just pulsing a coil and energizing at 60 hertz neon gas into plasma. So you got a wide range with those signal generators, and they got old style tube type generators that are using the capacitors like I talked about, the variable capacitors. That's how they change the frequency. So maybe the best way to the future is to use the old style technology. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you should be able to find those ranges. They were able to, with old tubes type, radios and stuff, they were able to generate really high frequencies. Heck, if you go back and look at the history of radar and sonar, that's what they were doing, you know? And they could tune it up to whatever frequency range they wanted. But it's all about, I will do as many videos as I can related to this subject. I'm working on this one right now where I got this antenna that I put together. It has the capacitor, germanium diode, a neon bulb, and let's see here. I thought I had one other thing. See, capacitor, germanium diode, and a neon bulb. No, that's all. It's three little deals. Basically, it's got aluminum wire, and it's set up for a north, south, east, west kind of configuration. And when it's picking up that radiant energy, it uses the ground on basically the equivalence of a capacitor, and which is kind of like what Tesla's radiant energy patent was. And then the positive actually goes down towards the ground. So when this thing builds up energy, then it's working just like Tesla's radiant energy patent, and the closer you get this to the ground with your spark gap or whatever, you got a little tiny spark gap at the bottom, it should produce enough ion between the spark gap itself to make that conductive between that gap, and it'll leap across that gap, so you should get a constant little arc, even only 3 feet off the ground, if everything that science says is correct. Then they say 100 volts per 3 feet, so I should be able to pulse a little miniaturized Tesla coil on real time, on demand, from 3 feet off the ground. So I'd have a Tesla coil that didn't take any batteries, that all it did was pull energy out of the air and shoot it across the spark gap to pulse the primary, which in turn energizes the secondary, and the faster that thing pulses, then the higher the frequency range will develop on the Tesla coil. And if it does what I believe it could do, it would eventually get to the point where it puts so much energy on top of the top load that you would actually get an ion wind right above the top load that would ionize the air around it and look for a path to ground. You'd get that breakout, you know, that lightning bolts that you see coming off the top of a Tesla coil, the breakout is what they call it.
Yeah.
So there you go, man.
Okay.
I will do as many videos as I can possibly get together as soon as I can on this type of deal, because I honestly believe that I know for a fact that with the right materials, there's all different types of materials that are, you know, basically a build up a static charge. Like you go find some of these wrapping materials, and you'll note that these things are always sticking to each other, like a styrofoam. The little beads of styrofoam always want to stick to each other. You see what I mean? And so imagine if you had a way to agitate those and then extract some of those electrons off of those while you're agitating them. It'll produce a static charge like rubbing your feet on a carpet. Same way the Van de Graaff generator rubs two different materials together and produces a static charge. And the same way the Van de Graaff generator does it. You know, a Van de Graaff generator at ground level will produce a lot of voltage. But imagine if you use that 100 volts per meter or per yard going up in the air, and you got that thing 100 feet in the air and you're doing the same thing, you're liable to get hit by a lightning bolt up there. You see what I mean?
Right.
It's amazing. But There you go. That's the answer, and it's the simplest way to get provable free energy. I think ad nauseum explained free energy over and over and over again.
I think that here's the way I look at it. There's two different types of people. Those that believe it exists, those that don't. I'm at the coffee shop yesterday. I see a dude. I'm like, hey, he's like a 71-year-old physicist. I talked to him about the idea of running a three-phase motor off less than an amp and then running a generator on getting a couple kilowatts off less than an amp of 120. And it's like, he's kind of like, no, that's impossible. And I was like, well, I mean, it's impossible because of some laws and stuff. Is it really impossible? If we did it together, basically, if we did it and it worked, would it be possible then? He's like, well, then I would have to admit I was wrong and that it is possible. And that's basically it. So the people, basically anybody on the fence now is just like, they're probably like, okay, well, if it's possible, then just show it to me and then that's fine.
That's the key
and then
right there.
I can believe it. And then but the idea is, well, actually, nobody's really going to show this to you. You're actually going to have to build it. And that's kind of what I told the physicist. Do you want to start coming over and we'll build it? And he was like, yeah. He's like, he's retired. He's bored. He's like, yeah, I'll come over. We'll build it. He's from like Sweden. And it's like, that's what it's going to really take is that instead of getting, nauseous about explaining it over and over again, if we were just to simply work on a few projects that people were replicating that easily proved these kind of things to be truths, it don't have to be so. I mean, I really like the idea of you going full off the grid and doing the Shaziz.net, and then like you, I've heard you say it on the radio, you're going to do it. And quite frankly, I think the day you do that is the day that more people start doing it.
Well,
that's also the day you don't have to talk so much about how it exists because it's there. And if you're waiting for somebody else to do it with you, like I'm here, I think there's a couple other people around that'll do it too. Like if we're really ready to do little things, and then at that point people will become a little bit more open-minded because it's like, well, I understand the law of thermodynamics, and it's really not, by the way, I always like listening to Tom Dearden because he explains how it doesn't violate the law of thermodynamics because they're not taking into consideration the quaternions in the fourth part of the equation. It's not vector mathematics. Like, you can simplify anything down to whatever.
Yep.
And when you simplify things, you take things out of the equation. And the original, the way I understand the Maxwell equation is in the quaternion that the atmosphere was taken into consideration and that the atmosphere is a vacuum of space that has an energy to it. And because that exists, because of the fourth part, not a vector, but a quaternion, that is why it doesn't violate the I didn't explain that to the physicist, but I think he would understand that. It's like, if we're in dead space, deep space, like a complete vacuum, lack of everything, like, you can say that, yeah, that the vector is true. But the reality is the vector operates in the atmosphere. And the atmosphere has variables of energy that are constants. And, like, those constants are why we don't even really need, like, the original thermodynamic equations, the way I understand them, were written correctly. It's just it took a genius to, like, understand them until we had computers to run these equations for us. And it's interesting that since we have computers now, we're not bringing back that part of the math in more so we can address why these anomalies occur. Bringing the math into why anomalies occur isn't really going to make them not anomalies. They're not anomalies. They're constants. And since they're constants, we don't really need to sit around and tell people anymore that free energy exists. There's a constant going on. It's proven. It's been known about since the 1700s, maybe earlier. It definitely has been known about by other cultures, like the Egyptians and people like that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And, like, now we're at the point where unless we actually start applying it, and, like, I think so many people have been stuck in the hobby realm, and maybe it is that when you went further than the hobby realm, like, you had unwelcome visitors.
Yeah.
And then you would be, like, kind of, like, apprehensive to share much more. But to be honest with you, we're at a different point in civilization where we're seeing the allowance of information to be shared. You know, people can get mad about censorship on the internet, but the fact of the matter is, there's more infighting than ever. The backyard inventor is at an advantage to go ahead and mess around and try to do some things to get off the grid, because if there's going to be infighting going on, that means that like food systems could get weird for a day or two. Well, or things could get odd for a day or two, and be real with you, people aren't ready. And we could sit around and talk about free electricity, but that's why I went and put the Mr. Coffee Pot up in the greenhouse, because I've known for a few years I'm going to need a greenhouse. It didn't happen overnight, and it wasn't free, and it took a while, but it's happening. And like, so if we were like, it would really, for me, I think it would put a lot at rest for everyone if there was like a simple device under $100 or $200 that you could generate heat. Because the element to generate the heat is $20 at Lowe's.
Yep.
And that's a hot water element replacement. Like your hot water tank, you're paying for all the insulation, all the copper, everything manufactured. Like that element is $20. And I'm sure on eBay it's much cheaper. That's Lowe's price.
I'm right.
So it's like, if we could come up with a device that took a deep cycle marine battery that anybody can get, and a little solar panel or any means possible to charge a battery, you could make a little bicycle that you had to pedal on for a couple hours a day, and it would keep that battery charged.
Yep.
Or even less than a couple hours a day. You just get on there and give it heck and, whatever. It's like, what I see right now is like, if we could, I'm sorry to go on a rant on your show, Shazoo, but I just really feel passionate about the idea of making a little bit of heat for people to be safe. And it's wintertime again. It's always my concern in wintertime. And, it's the kind of thing that even if you, not everybody has one, but if one person has one, that means their neighbors can come over.
We can do this thing, but two things before we get up out of here, because we're actually running over a little bit, but two things is, first off, the dream team is really important. We need a dream team on standby in every possible community that's interested in alternative energy, because the dream team's what's going to actually make it happen. And the dream team is basically what Tesla didn't have, what Bedini didn't have, what John Searle and Joseph Newman and Stan Myers, what they didn't have. And you got the dream team on standby so that whenever you put this information out there on the table, they can spread this information like wildfire. That way there's no way, once Pandora's box is open, there's no way to push it back down into the box. You get your dream team set up out there, and when you got a researcher out there that you know is getting ready to unload some information that everybody needs to be able to know about, and that now cannot be not be suppressed, you see where I'm going there? And
I do.
Once that's in place, then the whole concept of being able to go off the power grid safely without having the men in black come in there and shut you down before you get a chance to spread that information, there's no way they can stop it by that point, because every dream team is out there looking for the exact same thing. And when that information pops out there on the table, no matter which direction it comes from, everybody and his brother's got it so fast, and with the speed of today's technology, we can put that information out to the world in instant. The next thing is, there's a deal out there called Occam's Razor. It's a principle from philosophy. Suppose there exist two explanations for an occurrence. In this case, one requires the least speculation, is usually better, and another way is of saying it is that more assumptions you have made, the more unlikely an explanation. So essentially, the simplest explanation to free energy and what I've been trying to share with everybody out there is the right one, usually the right one. The harder and the more complex you try to put these things out here, the least people will be able to understand what it is you're trying to say. This is how society has kept everyone out there who is into alternative researchers from being able to get this information to the average Joe to an extent where they can understand it. This is why people who have gone to college will argue until they're blue in the face that you're wrong because it violates the so-called laws of physics and terminology like over unity, zero point, perpetual motion. They're just there to muddy up the water. The fact of the matter is, free energy does exist. It's proven science, no ifs, ands, or buts. This earth is a thermoelectric generator of epic proportions, and that's just one fraction of what this planet is capable of. That's not counting the wind, that's not counting the hydro, that's not counting the solar, that's not counting all the different earth battery type technologies, that's not counting all the materials and ways to store energy, to change energy. Everything that we've said here on this deal is proven by the laws of physics themselves. You're not using the laws of physics to your disadvantage. You're using the laws of physics because of your understanding to your advantage. You invoke the lens effect when you want to invoke the lens effect. If you understand that if you try to shove a lot of current through a certain type of material, that becomes a resistive load that in turn is going to get hot. Then you understand everything that there is to know about why a transformer gets hot. You're using too much energy on a transformer. The eddy currents produce heat, and that's why the things end up failing. Everything has a thermal breakdown point. When it reaches that thermal breakdown point, it will fail. What I'm saying to you, the listeners out there, and I'm hoping you share this podcast with other people out there, and I'm hoping you take me serious and build you a dream team in your community. Even if it's only two or more people, you bring these brilliant minds together, your dream team, my dream team, all of us on standby. When one of us has an idea, we shift it over to every one of us. At the same exact time, everybody has the information, and you keep that information flowing so rapidly and so in such a quantity that there's no way that it could ever be suppressed again. We have the technology. We've had the technology. The companies, the corporations, they know how to play the game. That's why they're on top. That's why you pay them the money to use the electricity. That's why you pay for fuel. Now, when you're tired of that and you want to see a more fair society in third world countries that they call, you know, not up to snuff to whatever, you know, the luxury style communities, everyone benefits. Everyone has fresh water. Everyone has plenty of food. And everyone has heating and cooling when needed. That's what I'm trying to get to. I need the dream teams to do it. I need you to have a dream team. I need my dream team. I need all you people out there and this technology to share this information with the world and us to take these solutions and put them into action. When you're ready, I'm ready. This is what I've been waiting for. And what you said here today, Ted, that's what I need to hear. You see what I mean? You got somebody who's going to come together and begin to work on a project with you. I've got connections with people that are willing to come together and work on a project. We just need to decide on which project and which direction to go, because there's so many different ways to produce, you know, what we need. There's so many different ways to tap into what nature's provided and to do it in a respectful and a clean manner. Clean, renewable, alternative energy is what they said they wanted. That's what we're giving them. With that said, folks, Ted, you got any last words before we bail out of here?
No, appreciate you, bro. Thank you.
All right, well, I told the world I'm going to do something. I fully intend on doing it. And hopefully you understand what I said to you today in today's show, because the reason why I bring these things to you is because I'm trying to show you how many different options are available. I'm trying to show you all these different types of things that have already existed. You know, Stephen Gibbons in the chat room, he's got that link links page. Go up to the top of the Super Chat, click on his links page, check it out, have conversations with him, tell him, you know, what you think of it and all that kind of stuff. It's appreciated. Share links. Invite people to the show. Give them a Skype deal. You know, have them call me on Skype. Join me on the radio show. So, with that said, I'd like to see a time when your dream team and my dream team come together during some sort of a, you know, get-together or convention where we bring nifty gizmos, you know, Van de Graaff generators, Wimshurst generators, all different types of wind turbines and stuff like that. And we have a free energy convention somewhere, and we show people what's already existed, what we're working on and so forth, to share the world the solutions that they said they wanted. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.